Good. All right, we're live. This is a perfect time for me to talk to you about this because I just took a yoga class and had a vegan lunch.
Awesome. How do you feel?
I feel like namaste. I feel centered.
Yeah.
I feel like my chakras are in line. I feel fine.
Well, were you where to have a vegan lunch? Did you travel over there with like
this
a
is
car?
A restaurant?
No, go to like a car without leather seats.
No. Was it? It's not really a vegan lunch. Like yeah. Car had leather seats.
Yeah, so it's then true. Also on top of that, like your tofu, was it meat flavored?
No, I didn't have tofu. I just had vegetables.
Okay. Well, vegetables but still taste like vegetables.
I did kill a mosquito as soon as I got out of my car, so I don't think that's vegan either.
Well, sounds like you're a murderer.
Sounds like it to me. Corey, if you don't know, Knowlton, last way, right way to pronounce your last name?
You got it.
One of the reasons why I wanted to have you on this podcast is I'm a big fan of Jim Shockey. Jim Shockey's show, The Uncharted Show. And yep. Something's going on my nose. And I'd seen you on that show. So when the controversy broke, CNN covered the story. For folks who don't know what we're talking about, Corey, you bid money to be one of the people that got a chance to kill a black rhino. For people who are not aware of how conservation and hunting work, what they try to do, especially with endangered species, is they have to sometimes protect endangered species from their own. And it seems very counterintuitive. For people who are on the outside looking in, you say, well, this is an endangered animal. Why are you killing one of these endangered animals and trying to call this conservation? But with rhinos in particular, or a lot of aggressive animals, even giraffes, the older males, the older bulls, the older non-breeding members of these groups sometimes will attack the young males and kill them.
And females.
And females.
And calves.
They'll kill everything. And it is just a natural part of being a wild animal. When the numbers are strong and healthy, it's like it happens in bears every day of the week. It's just a part of being a bear. But when it happens with something that's endangered, like a black rhino, they're forced into a very peculiar situation where they have to most likely either kill or put this animal in captivity. Am I right?
A lot of different situations depending on the animal, what it's actually doing, right? But yes, I mean, some of the things you're talking about could apply.
And this is where it gets counterintuitive. So they have a bid, and the bid gets to, you want it, like, what is it, $350,000?
That's correct, yes.
It's a lot of fucking money. And you went over there, you shot this rhino, all that money went towards aiding the rhino population.
It wasn't enough money.
Wasn't enough.
It should have been a lot more money.
Because they need more money? Or because
absolutely, they need more money, and the value of that was greater than that amount of money. Was the amount of money that I was able to claw together and make happen. The anti-hunting community and the animal rights community came out so strongly against this situation for what I think either misunderstanding or they were trying to keep the contribution down, one or the other, or both. And there's people who were much wealthier than I am and had a lot more money who really wanted to spend the money. But at the time, I don't think that they had a better idea of what was to come than I did. I guess I was a little bit naive about it. But these people are, a couple of them are very well-known people. And I don't think they wanted to put their employees and their company and, you know, their life, their family through the same things that I end up going through. And they were basically chased out by the anti-hunting community's rhetoric and their attacks.
What was surprising to you about this whole experience? Because it had to be a pretty life-changing experience. Like, you're a guy who's, you know, relatively famous in the hunting world, you being on that Jim Shockey show, and you decide that you want to be the guy, so you spend all this money. What was your goal when you wanted to do this? Did you want to bring awareness to this? Was it something that you felt strongly about?
From the very beginning, well, I've always felt very strongly about conservation and hunting, okay, ever since I was young. And, but the way this came about was a friend of mine who runs a company called Conservation Force, or a nonprofit 501c3. And he came to me and said, look, the people I had that are bidding on this are gone. And he asked me if I would bid on it. And the bid that I made was basically within very close to the minimum bid. There was really no one else.
Really?
Yeah.
The minimum bid was $350,000.
Well, see, you got to keep in mind they sell these over in Namibia. They have auctions amongst themselves. This was the first one that took place in the United States. That's why it brought so much publicity. This wasn't the first rhino that was to be brought into the United States. So this is something that happened before, just not on a public stage in the United States. So they are able to get a certain amount of money already for them, and they wanted to get more over here. That was the whole idea. And so they brought it over here. The permanent secretary of the Namibian Ministry of Environment and Tourism, him, and basically they're in one of the rhino experts of the country came over and took place. They were there at the auction when it took place.
So the amount of money that gets raised is this enormous amount, $350,000, in your opinion, is low. It would have probably been much more if there wasn't.
Yeah, not in my, in the opinion of many, in fact, low. And I believe it'll come about again, but probably in a different way. And it's going to be at least, I would say, three times higher.
So they're going to do it again.
I don't think they're going to do it again in the fashion they did. They're absolutely going to do it again, but they're not going to do it in the fashion they did this time. I don't think. I don't speak for them, so I don't know.
No.
But yes, they will continue to auction off these surplus rhinos.
And it's not hard to get people to be willing to do this, but in order to get people to spend $350,000 to save the rhino, just to donate to save it without hunting, it's pretty difficult.
I actually think that's more complicated, too, because in this situation that I was in, the money had to be proved to go to the right places to benefit the rhino. The path had to be proven to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife for them to grant the import permit. So it went through the process, which was like the most vetted process possible on every level. It was the most vetted conservation hunt probably in history. And they do these hunts like this here in the United States all the time. They auction off deer, special deer tags, special elk tags, special sheep tags. Okay, this year I was in an auction where a mule deer tag went for $385,000. So they do these all the time to raise money. So it's not like a new idea. But in this case, it was the most vetted way for the money to get to the source. And I believe in conservation. I believe in hunting as a means, as a tool to help perpetuate it and keep these animals alive. So I had a personal vested interest in the process. So, and there's other people like me who feel the same way, and they are happy to donate to that. Like you're saying, just to get somebody to do it. Well, where do I give it to? How do I know the money's going to the right place?
Right. It's like similar to, like, I don't know if you know about the Red Cross controversy. Did you see that just came out a couple days ago about Haiti? That they millions and millions and millions of dollars went to Haiti to help people after what was it, the big earthquake they had? Is that what it was? And they built like five houses. Like they don't even know where most of the fucking money went. It's just a complete fuck fest. Hey, look at this. $500 million spent, six homes built. Jesus Christ.
Well, I think that speaks to the point that I was trying to make.
Yeah. And that's obviously a different scenario. We're talking
who
about
who knows what that is. You look at your news source there.
Salon.com. It's the greatest news.
Yeah, there you go.
They're so unbiased. Yeah. They love everyone equally.
So
what do they have to say about you? Anything mean?
Well, yes. Most everybody who had an agenda to it that was against what the whole process of what I was doing. And this goes from all the way from the head of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife to, you know, trying to make it look like CITES and IUCN aren't the world's foremost, you know, experts. Okay.
Especially what are those companies? What is that?
IUCN is a group that puts together the red list of endangered species. Okay. They are the foremost experts on the subject. And a guy named Michael Knight heads up that African rhino specialist group. And he's the foremost expert in the world on rhinos. Okay, so you have the world's foremost experts in this. You had the WWF, a guy named Chris Weaver in Namibia. who heads that up. You had WWF behind it. You had IUCN behind it. You had CITES behind it. You had U.S. Fish and Wildlife, which, you know, I come down on two different sides with them. Sometimes I agree with them. Sometimes I don't. Okay. But in this case, I absolutely agree with them. So you had, like, the foremost authorities in the world all agreeing with this. And then you have a large amount of people who type in 75 characters on Twitter and feel better about it. And, you know, they're weighing in. And in today's day and age, you look at that and it's like a handful of people who are emotional about something outweigh public, you know, I mean, the experts of the world opinion.
Well, it becomes very controversial, first of all, because it went on at the same time as they were broadcasting another species of rhino that was going extinct. There was three of them left, one male, two women, and the male wasn't breeding with them. And they were like, this is it. You're looking at the last three of these rhinos.
Sure.
And it also, part of the reason is it falls into this category that people call trophy hunting. And it's very different than going to the supermarket and buying meat from an animal that was killed for meat. The idea of trophy hunting bothers a lot of people because they think what you're doing is you're going over there and you're shooting something to prop up your ego. You're shooting something because, you know, you want to be the master. You want to go over there and blast this thing and take a picture, grip and grin and smile.
Yeah, I think that's like I'm sure throughout history that's existed, but I don't think that that's a accurate representation of people who you can call trophy hunting whatever you want. I mean, you can put it on, if you're out there looking for the biggest cow elk because you want the meat, all right, you're being selective about which one you're picking. Okay. So for what the truth about, let's, you know, quote unquote trophy hunting is, you're going out there looking for the most mature male of the species that you can find. Okay. And you're going through a selective process. And I think there is, amongst hunters, there's definitely a movement going, you know, Jim and I used to talk about it all the time. We would go out, we're looking for the oldest male of the species we can find. Okay, because that's the best one to take out. He's already breeded. He's going to go down. He's going to fall over dead on the mountain if it's a ram. And birds are going to pick his eyes out while he's alive. Okay, he's going to go through a horrible death. And we're going to spare that animal that. And so there's a lot that goes into that. And I understand people say, okay, that's what it is. Joe, like, for instance, I just met you today. And my idea of who you are isn't who Joe Rogan is. The only person that knows who Joe Rogan is Joe.
I think some other people know. Jamie knows me.
Okay, well, whatever. All right. In reality, you're the only person that knows your thoughts. Okay, my point is, I can't put the decisions that brought you to where you are right now. I don't know what that is, okay? And in this case, I had hundreds of thousands of people.
Put this sucker right.
So I had hundreds of thousands of people trying to say, you did this for this reason.
Right.
They don't know what reason I did it for.
Right.
They never talked to me. They never met me. Okay. And so, yeah, okay, you want to go ahead and lump everybody in there because it's easy for you to disenfranchise them.
Well, you're defending yourself here, and I would be defensive too if I had experienced the kind of barrage of hate that I've seen leveled your way. But that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on, is give you a chance over, you know, a couple hours to speak your mind.
Yeah.
And so, what people have a problem with, I think, is people that want to kill things and don't eat them. There's some people that have a problem with you eating meat. There's some people that have a problem with you eating fish. Some people, you know, some people go deep with it, right? I think there's varying degrees of outrage when it comes to people killing animals. But at the top of that list is what they call trophy hunting. And that's that's someone who kills it that doesn't have any intention of eating it. If you kill a mature mule deer because it has an awesome rack and you're still going to eat that animal. It's still food.
Or you're
going to
eat it, you're going to donate it, you're going to do something with it.
Yeah, it's delicious food, and it's there's a reason why people hunt them. It's because they taste fantastic. It's high-quality protein. It's great for you. You're not eating a rhino, right? Did you eat it?
Absolutely, the first thing.
You ate it?
Right there on the spot.
Did you?
Absolutely.
What does it taste like?
It was better than elephant.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You ate an elephant?
Sure.
Whoa, what does that taste like?
Not as good as rhino.
So what part of the rhino do you eat?
Right. Well, we delivered the entire thing to a whole village. You know, our group wasn't hungry enough to eat the entire rhino right there.
I would imagine. Yeah, how many thousands of pounds was this thing, by the way?
You know, I'd guess it was between 2,500 and 3,000 be my guess as a large animal.
And this, did they have any refrigeration in this village, or is this just they eat
what
they can?
You know, to the extent, no. There was so many people that wasn't going to be a large issue.
Yeah, I've seen that before with an elephant hunt on television. It was a documentary on the controversy in these hunting camps in South Africa. And they shot this elephant and donated it to these villagers. And these people came with baskets and stuffed these baskets with elephant meat. And they cut that entire carcass down to bite-sized portions or meal-sized portions in just a matter of a few hours. It was insane. It was crazy to watch. So when people think of this being just a waste, just killing this animal,
they're wrong. 100%.
That wasn't really discussed at all in the news. That was never covered. I never saw one article that covered the fact that they fed it to people.
Yes, we did. There's a video of it on CNN.
Did they show the article? Feeding of it to the people?
Absolutely. I got pictures of it on my phone. There you go. I'll show you right here.
I believe you 100%. I'm not questioning you.
Well, look, I want to show you.
Okay.
You're sitting across from me right now. And
I'm looking at the CNN article. I don't see any pictures of it.
If you go to the meat delivery... Is there a link
in there?
It should be. I've got it on my phone. But, for instance, here's me standing in front of the village, a selfie with the entire rib cages of that animal.
Whoa.
After the black rhino hunt, a village celebrates meat delivery.
Oh, okay. So there's a separate video other than one that I had watched, which was the title of that was Texas Hunter Bags His Rhino in Controversial Hunt in Namibia.
Yeah.
So not so controversial to the people that you delivered the meat to.
Absolutely not.
Those people, like if you look at them, they're very excited to get this protein. an elephant, huh?
The idea of meat wastage in Africa isn't that. Look, in the United States, it's hard for us to comprehend it because we've got a system of such excess that the poorest among us are the most overweight. You go to Africa, a poor person is skin and bones.
Right.
Okay. You know, people say the money is the root of all evil. Poverty is the root of all evil. You go over there and see it firsthand. It's horrible. And so they're not wasting an ounce of that meat.
Now, this animal had been targeted because it had killed one young bull already. And it was an older, angry male with not a whole lot of time left, right? Is that the idea?
That's correct. And I believe it had killed more than that through its life. It had been transported already to this area, like, when it was around 19 years old.
And now it's 30. How old do they live?
I saw a list that had them there, and they had them alive in the field listed at over 37 years old.
Wow.
So, you know, they live at least that long.
You're not that old. How old are you?
I'm 36 years old.
How long have you been doing this big game wild hunting thing?
I got into it when I started guiding hunts when I was 16 years old.
You started guiding hunts when you were 16?
Mm-hmm. My first, I graduated high school. I was guiding hunts through high school.
What kind of hunts? Whitetail?
No, like ducks. And ducks and geese and stuff. And then I slowly got into hunting. It just became a passion to me. We grew up real, real poor. I just laugh all the time when I see people talk about how, you know, like I'm some rich, over, you know, super, talk about my family and the oil business and whatnot. I was already, before my brother, my father, their partner had any success in the oil business, man, I was in my 20s. I was, you know, I'd already charted my path and was going.
I wasn't aware of your background. I was going to ask you that, too. Yeah. Like, where the fuck did you come up with $350,000?
Well, you know, luckily, I mean, I've been successful in life, and especially in the hunting business, I was very successful in guiding hunts and setting up hunts. And that's how Jim and I got together. I was booking hunts all around the world. But anyway, so I started when I was like 16, taking people duck and goose hunting. And Texas is, you know, obviously a different place. I don't know how much time you spent in Texas, but hunting.
I love Texas.
Yeah, Texas, hunting and fishing is a part of
life.
It's just, and for the most part, it's very accepted. Okay. And even if you don't do it, you have a family member that does, you got a buddy that work does. And so people in Texas aren't that judgmental, really. I mean, about this at least. And so, anyway, we're all growing up together as a family, and it's a part of our thing, you know. And my granddad, I grew up in poverty when I was real young, and that what we had to do was go hunting and fishing, you know. And I don't think I shot my first deer till I was, you know, 15 or 16 years old. And so I did this bird hunting, and then I graduated high school, and I went and got a job working for a guy in Colorado guiding mountain lion hunts. And then I, you know, started another business up with floor tile and made money, and I was saving my money up to go hunting, and I met another guy, a guy named Aaron Nielsen, and him and I started up a company together. And we started taking people on hunts. We'd go on these different hunts ourselves. We'd go there, find the area, check it out, and go on these adventures, and then come back and get people together and go on more of them. And it's kind of snowballed. When I met Jim in 2001 or two, back then, you know, I was just getting into it, and I already, you know, knew quite a bit. I'd already hunted Africa. I'd already gone through a lot of places in the world, and just got into it. And said, "Hey, Jim, you want to go to Africa?" And we went, and that was his first African trip. And we went over there, had a great trip, filmed it for a video at the time. He goes on and becomes more successful in his TV stuff. I keep doing what I did. And then a few years later, we came up with this idea to start this TV show about our lives as professionals in the hunting industry. And we called it The Professionals. And because personally, Jim and I would talk about it. And I'm not going to speak down about these people, but at the time in the outdoor television world, you know, which is a different thing than most TV in a lot of ways. I think you've talked about it on your podcast before. We were like, well, a lot of these people are calling, they're saying they're professionals, but they're getting like a free bow. You know, we're actually making our livings doing this, you know, taking people hunting and outfitting and guiding and whatnot.
Also the quality of the show.
Yeah, true.
Jim's shows are excellent. They're really well done, especially Uncharted could easily be on the Discovery Channel or the History Channel. I mean, it is a great show.
Yeah. And so that was kind of our goal. We wanted to chronicle this and make the production level as high as we could and show people that, you know, there is a human side to this, and that's what was our goal.
So do you get frustrated when you watch, like, there's some reality, or not reality shows, there's some hunting shows that are on television that, you know, are essentially like cable access shows. I mean, they're just really poorly made, bad editing, bad personalities.
I mean, that's those guys' dream. I'm not going to say I get frustrated at it. You know, it's just like everybody who plays baseball is not going to be Mickey Mantle, right?
When people flip through the channels and they pause on one of those shows, and that's their exposure to hunting?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that every single one of them, even ours, would be a true representation of all of hunting. You know what
I
mean? So it's hard, you know. I feel like we strive for that. I watched a lot. I don't watch hunting shows because I lived it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I really lived it to the fullest. I've been everywhere I could have ever dreamed of and seen everything. So it's hard for me to watch it. You know, it'd be like you going outside of all the fights you've watched. Are you going to get really excited about watching two bums duke it out in front of the studio?
Unfortunately, yes.
Okay.
I do.
Well, that's why probably you're so good. Okay. It's so good at what you do.
I like watching little kids beat each other up.
Okay. All right. Sorry.
As long as nobody
swing and a miss.
But I see your point. I totally see your point. So you started out hunting essentially for food.
Well, yeah. Well, no. We ate them.
Part of life.
Part of life. You know. I mean, I grew up. We went hunting. We shot doves. We shot quail. We ate them. Mm-hmm. Okay. We went fishing. We were catching release and boiling grease.
Right.
Okay. We were catching crappie and eating them. Mm-hmm. That was part of life.
How did you go from that to shooting an elephant?
Well, if you really like hunting and you go over there and you learn more about it, you know, and you have a passion for it, if that's what you want to do, you just go.
Right, but what leads you to want to shoot an elephant? Like, what?
Personally?
Yes.
I just loved hunting. I loved the idea of being out there. I loved the idea of being with local people. I loved the idea of seeing the way it worked in the other parts of the world. I mean, I had a burning, crazy desire to go experience nature.
Right.
Okay. And be a part of the cycle of life in an intimate way everywhere I could go. Like, people don't realize it, I don't think, and it's hard, you know, like, and I'll get into it later with you, really interested to hear your path that brought you to it. I'm sure you've talked on it, and we don't have to talk on it because you probably, right now, it doesn't bother, you know, if you've talked about it, your listeners get bored of it or whatever, but I'd really like to know it, okay, because you probably understand, and I don't want to, like, speak for you, but when you're that close to an animal, when you're within bow range of an animal, it's a different experience than you have going to 7-Eleven or whatever you're going to have in a normal life. And so in a way, that would be the way I would translate it. I just wanted to go everywhere I possibly could. Mm-hmm. And I read everything I possibly could, and I learned everything I possibly could, especially about, I had a real passion for Asia. I've hunted all over Asia. Everywhere that I could go in Asia, I went. You know, I could go down the list, it would astonish you. And so I went over there, and Asian hunting is, by and large, brutally hard.
Why is that?
I mean, we went to Nepal, you're up to almost 17,000 feet. You know, you walk in, you walk out. You know, your whole camp is, you're being carried in or carrying out a lot of times. And if you're backpack hunting, you're carrying everything you live in. You know, I mean, I'm 36 years old going on like 86 years old because of all the diseases and stuff my body's been through, you know, for
Giardia and all that shit.
I never had Giardia, but I had one they couldn't figure out, the Mayo Clinic one time, like, and it was killing me. And then I had malaria. I've had that. I've had numerous other infectious diseases that were, you know, destroying me. At 20, let me think, was 22 years old, I got malaria, and my fever got so bad that my gums were immediately like a 40-year-old person. So
your gums were?
Yeah, like a fever damaged your gums. I guess I'm not a doctor, is what they told me.
But what happens to your gums when you're
40? I don't know, man. It's something that has to do with high fever for a long time. I don't know.
So it just like makes your gums recede.
Yeah, you have
like
all
that?
Dude, malaria is a bad deal.
Yeah, I've had a friend who had malaria.
Yeah, and so I didn't catch it till later. Part of the problem is like the medicines they give you make you feel bad, right? So you don't really notice it coming on at first. It's almost better in some circumstances just not to take the prophylactics. And I'm not going to say anybody should do that, but personally, I do that a lot unless I just know I'm in a solid malaria area. And then you'll know that it's coming on sooner, because by the time it hit me, I was really sick.
So you're talking about the anti-malaria medication
Yeah.
you take before you get it?
Yes.
Yeah, I had a friend who took that, and he was drinking. And apparently, you're not supposed to take it and drink. And he went crazy. Like, he got violent, and apparently
yeah,
hallucinate.
Probably Larium, the one you take once a week.
I think that was exactly what it was.
Yeah, it'll make you hallucinate and freak out. But
people hear you say that you have a passion for it, you know, and that you love being in wildlife, and I understand that, but the big question would be, why not just go there and see those animals? Like, why would you want to go and kill an elephant? Like, what is it about?
I you know, it's the same thing. It's hard for me to put it in words, but I mean, I believe that human beings are a part of the cycle of life. I believe your eyes are in the front of your head. I believe you have canine teeth, not for eating salad.
Salad's good for you, though.
It's great. Eat it. Have it up. Okay? And so I believe that's why you have them. I believe that Right. we are predators. I believe it's a part of us.
Right.
And so for me to explain something that is a part of me, mm-hmm. it's hard like that. It's hard for me to say. And I think people get caught up in, well, you just enjoy the killing. It's like you don't hunt to kill. It's you kill to have hunted in a lot of ways. And I've been on 12
unsuccessful. You don't hunt to kill. You kill to have hunted. What do you mean by that?
If you're a hunter, you're going out hunting. Mm-hmm. You're not going out killing. If I liked killing things, I'd work at the chicken plant and I'd get 11,000 chickens every day. If right. I really got a thrill out of killing stuff, okay? And I've gone on 12 like hunts that I went on, unsuccessful sheep hunts. And those were some of the best hunts that I ever had. And it wasn't anything about killing the animal or not killing the animal. Yeah, it's a goal. But that was kind of part of the reason that brought me to those places. You're not going to go to these places, man, for no reason, okay? Mm-hmm. You're not thinking, when people think about, you know, Africa, they're thinking about the Maasai Mara and a nice East African or Kruger Park type photo safari. You're not going into darkest Africa on the border of the Congo or in the Congo or, you know, these nasty places in the world to go take pictures. Most people aren't going to do it. Not even the photo people, you're going to get to like the rawest of the raw. They're going to go and do that stuff. It's brutal on you. It's not comfortable. You go out and hang out with, you know, with pygmies who are very tough people, for instance, been to Cameroon, and they're waking up every morning. A lot of them, you know, it's their lives are hard. Okay. It's not a nice existence. And you go out there and exist with them. It's a different thing.
So you feel compelled to go to these places and compelled to hunt.
Absolutely.
But, see, people have, like, if they found out you're killing, you know, an antelope or something like that. It seems normal. You know, you're shooting that, you eat it. But shooting an elephant to people, they have a hard time with it because they're intelligent and they're social creatures and they know each other for they have insane
Most
memories.
All these animals are intelligent.
Are they? Really?
White-tailed deer, if they're hunted, they're really intelligent. Well, wolf, extremely intelligent.
Wolves are very intelligent, yeah.
Okay, they're look, in an innate way to stay alive. They're much more intelligent about their environment than you and I ever would because that's their home and they live in it. So it's a different thing. And yeah, elephants, are they intelligent? Absolutely. Okay, do they have ethics and emotions? No. I mean, outside of, you know, rawest form, I've been around animals that I thought were angry.
Well, they definitely have emotions, right? They get upset at dead loved ones, but ethics, that's a human construct.
There you go.
Yeah.
And that's what happens is when people are trying to apply human constructs to animals, what right does the antelope have not to be killed by the jaguar? Or, I'm sorry, the leopard.
Mm-hmm.
What right does it have not to be killed by the leopard?
I mean, it's a part of its life. That makes sense to people. What doesn't make sense is the desire. I think for some people, there's a desire to go over there and shoot beautiful animals.
Like the white-tailed deer is beautiful. It's killed every day.
I agree.
Okay.
But it seems normal to people because it's killed every day, because we kill it and we eat mm-hmm. it. An elephant seems like something that you see at the circus. It seems like something that's endangered.
There you go. There's the whole thing. There's 250,000 elephants in sub-Saharan Africa. How endangered does that sound to you?
Yeah, that's true. I wanted to get to that. But
okay,
you asked normal people, the average person with the average exposure to elephants, and
sure.
they think they're endangered.
Okay. Unfortunately, that's not true in sub-Saharan Africa. In places like CAR, it's true. They're in trouble.
And in these places, sometimes they actually have to kill these elephants because they start encroaching in human territory and
just
stomping
population
villages.
Control.
And
just straight population control. I know a guy who killed 1,200 elephants.
Jesus Christ.
Okay. 1,200.
Why did he do that?
Population control.
So he lives down there.
Yeah. Well, I don't even know if he's still alive now, but anyway, yeah.
That was his thing.
Well, he worked for the government killing them.
And when you do this, you have to spend a considerable amount of money to kill an elephant, right?
Not necessarily.
No?
What do you consider a considerable amount of money?
How much does it cost?
I mean, you can go over there sometimes. I mean, I know people who've shot them for a couple thousand dollars.
You could shoot an elephant for
a couple
thousand dollars?
You're not bringing the tusk home. You're shooting it and then the village eating it.
And what do they do with the tusks?
That would be like on a cow, probably. Just a female in population control. I mean, the least that I've ever heard of anybody shooting a bull elephant for, you know, in recent times, probably like $8,000, $8,000. And then the government just keeps a tusk.
And the government keeps a tusk and does what with them?
I don't know. It depends what, you know, what do they put them in storage? I don't know exactly what they do with them.
Yeah, that's a weird thing because of the ivory trade. Like
correct.
That was the poaching and the ivory trade. I mean, that's what we see all the time when we connect elephants with death. We see these animals, they're sawed off tusks and, you know, and the rest was left behind.
That's poachers.
Yeah.
That's criminals. Horrible criminals.
So if you go over and you shoot an elephant, if you shoot a bull elephant,
mm-hmm.
you can't bring the tusks back.
Yes, you can.
You can.
In certain, like if you shoot one in South Africa or Namibia right now, you can import them.
You can.
Absolutely.
I thought there was a ban on importing ivory.
Only in, they shut down Zimbabwe until they change their structure. It's not because there's not enough elephants there. They have, you know, thousands and thousands of elephants. In Tanzania, they shut down the import for different reasons, you know, with regards to poaching and whatnot.
And so the only thing that kills elephants is rarely lions will kill them, right?
I think
other than people.
Other elephants.
Other elephants.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those apex animals that if people don't step in and do something about the population,
they destroy the habitat.
And they can get out of control.
That's Botswana.
Botswana's
eastern,
bad?
Yeah, eastern Botswana is bad in that they destroyed. It's like a tornado in a lot of places. I went to a place. The place that I hunted elephant was in Botswana, and it really looked like a hurricane had come through. It just looked like the whole landscape was demolished.
And it was just because of elephants?
Absolutely.
You're dealing with some enormous. I mean, how much does a big elephant weigh?
You know, I mean, well, over 10,000 pounds. I guess 14. I mean, the biggest one I've probably seen, I would have guessed 14 foot tall. It's a huge animal. It's a different experience hunting an elephant.
Yeah, I would imagine.
You know, it's a totally different thing. And the thing that you have to understand, there's different reasons to hunt different things. Okay? You know, it's not like a hunting is some giant just broad stroke. And in the case of elephants, if you want people to have a positive benefit, local people who really determine like the survival of any animal is local people. Okay. You have to put a positive benefit on it for them. If it's just living next door to an elephant, you don't want that. If it's living next door to a lion, you don't want that. Okay. And so you're trying to understand that you have to give them a reason to keep it there or it's not going to be there.
Did you ever see Louis Theroux's documentary on the hunting camps in Africa?
Mm-mm.
It's very interesting. It's very good. If you don't know who Louis Theroux is, he's a documentarian from the UK, and he really gets very, very thorough on subjects, and he spent a lot of time in this South African hunting camp, but it got down to the end of it, and you know, he was pestering this guy who ran this camp to the point where the guy said, "You don't get it. Africa is fucked." He goes, "It's fucked." He goes, "They destroy. The only way you're going to keep these fucking animals is if there were something."
Must have been a French PH.
I think he was...
the way you're talking.
I don't know what he was.
Yeah, but anyway, no, it's 100%.
But that's what he's saying, it has to be worth something.
Dude, I look at it like a lot of people in the Western world are looking at it through an ethereal mist and not getting it. Like if it pays, it will stay, period.
Right.
If it pays, it's going to stay.
Do you think that part of the problem with people and their perceptions of hunting is just based on this really weird insulated world that we live in where you could just go to the store and buy meat and most people,
hold on.
The vast majority.
100%. Let me be clear. 100%.
That's the problem.
That is the problem. And in addition to that, they think that Timon and Pumbaa, who are Disney characters created by a couple guys and drawn up and given personalities.
My daughters love them.
Okay, and so do mine. Okay, but they're not real.
Exactly.
Okay, the real Timon and Pumbaa are out there fighting for their lives and would eat each other. Okay, yeah. All right, that's the way it works.
And would eat you.
They would eat you. They would do anything. Like, okay, the real animals out there are doing anything they can to survive.
Yeah, you saw that woman who's the editor from Game of Thrones got pulled out of her car last week.
Yeah.
Fuck. That's a real lion. That's a real lion. That's not the Lion King. That's not...
No, even that was in a park situation, mm-hmm. fenced in.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, and not... one thing people don't... Like, lion is a big deal with me. I've hunted lion, been on many a lion hunt.
Do you eat lions?
You don't eat lions in general.
Cameron Haynes was going to eat a lion if he shot it.
Well,
that dude would eat a shoe if he shot it.
That's fine, but it's not the reason. That's not the reason to go hunting a lion.
Well, what is the reason to go hunting a lion?
In reality, if you want to keep lions around in wild areas that aren't parks, you have to have a local benefit for it. That's the best reason.
You have to have some sort of financial incentive for the people in the area.
Financial incentive for people in the area.
And also prevents poachers by hiring rangers.
Well, or just like, for instance, in this black rhino situation, there wasn't anybody in there going to rat out where these black rhinos were at. You go to South Africa, and I was actually hunting in a place the other day that was in the middle of the rhino war. Okay, while I was there, they killed a poacher one of the nights I was there. Okay, and it's a real deal. Those people are having to lie detector test their staff monthly. Okay, it's real simple. I saw this.
Because the staff are poachers?
Their staff are tipping off poachers.
Whoa.
Okay, people in the government are tipping off poachers. It's an easy deal. Okay, well, I just saw a white rhino isn't a black rhino. You got to keep that in mind.
Okay. A black rhino is what you shot.
Yes. And a white rhino, which was brought back from 30 animals to over 20,000 because of incentivizing people to own them and them being able to sell them on a hunting market, okay? And for whatever other reasons, they were put into private ownership. They went from 30 animals to 20,000.
Wow.
Okay, the white rhino is very docile in general, not all of them, okay? And they're they're just easier to be around. A black rhino has not a lot of tolerance in wild areas. I mean, you saw that on our hunt. It charged Ed, tried to kill him. Okay, so anyway, white rhino are just more docile. They're going to be hanging around, whatever. That's easier for the poachers to kill. And obviously, there's more of them, a lot more. And so anyway, it's just an easy animal for poachers to get. And if somebody sees it on the side of the road, they tip off the local guy. Okay, they were paying between 800 and $1,000 per bullet on the black market to kill these white rhino or any rhino.
$800 to $1,000 per bullet.
That's what a poacher would pay.
What do you mean by per bullet?
Buying a bullet on the black market to put in this gun and go poach a rhino. Pow.
They have to pay that much for a bullet.
That's what these people were paying because they got $375. You can't go kill a rhino in general with just a freaking 22.
Right.
Okay, so to get a 375 or 458 bullet, that's what they were paying to get that bullet.
So they had to get the bullets through illegal means as well.
Absolutely. They're criminals.
Right.
It's not like you and I are getting together and going out there and saying, let's go kill a rhino today. Okay, and we're going to go get our bullets we bought on fair and legal here in the United States or wherever we buy.
I think another issue that Louis Theroux covered in his documentary and that a lot of people are not aware of is that a lot of the animals in Africa that are being hunted on a regular basis were on the verge of extinction just two decades ago, maybe three.
Okay.
And when they started doing those hunting camps, now these animals are thriving. And yes. The reason why they're thriving is because they're worth money. And that bothers people. It bothers people the idea that the only way these animals are surviving and thriving is if somebody is willing to pay money to go over there and hunt them.
Because these people who are sitting there looking at it ain't doing a damn thing to save them, Joe. Okay, they're saving them to death by making uneducated comments and throwing up, just typing 75 characters into Twitter or your Facebook page isn't saving a rhino. It's making you feel better.
Right.
And these people's feelings are in the way of the actual conservation of wildlife through the people who know how to conserve wildlife.
Well, this is something that, for me, as an outsider who slowly ventured into the world of hunting, I had to learn. And that's why I kind of sympathize with the people that are on the outside that aren't aware of all this. When someone says, yeah, I couldn't imagine someone going to Africa and shooting these animals. It's so fucked up. I take a deep breath,
I want you to define that conversation. Define what you just said. What's screwed up about it?
Well, their idea is that you're going over there with bloodlust. You're on this orgy of murder over there, gunning down all these different animals and posing with their heads.
That's their idea, and it's wrong.
But it also doesn't cover the reality of the money that's involved in paying for those tags and going over there and flying over there and paying for these hunting camps to stay open has kept these animals in enormous populations where they were dying off just 20 years ago. That's a reality. And it's the only reality that we have documented in Africa right now as far as conservation of a lot of these game animals.
Especially outside the parks. Yeah. Look, a lot of the parks are spared because they're surrounded by game management areas and hunting areas.
And sometimes they have to take those parks and they have to have either someone come in and minimize or control the population and kill some of the animals because they get too high, or they have to open them up for hunters.
Yeah, I guess the best way I could put this is this. Most everybody would agree that humans are complicit in the plight of a lot of these animals. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. Then why shouldn't humans be complicit in saving them and keeping them around? Okay. Through a traditional method that has worked in conservation for hundreds and hundreds of years. Look, the idea not to hunt wasn't a part of humanity for just recently, maybe the last couple hundred years and to the forefront, maybe the last 30 to 50 years. Okay. Nobody thought about it. We're going hunting.
Well, before refrigeration, it was like one of the only, you have to do it on a regular basis.
75 years ago, we were basically in an agrarian society in a lot more ways, right? And people looked, if they're going to have lamb chops, they're going out there and killing that lamb right there. Okay, how many people who eat lamb chops today are going to go out and kill that lamb?
Almost none. And that's where it gets weird.
It's very weird. And to you and I, I've heard you speak about it, it becomes very hypocritical.
Okay. It is. It's 100% hypocritical.
Okay.
But it's also wild that the hypocritical is the most common. It's more common to be hypocritical about meat than it is to not because of this system that we've set up that's very effective that allows you to go to any store anywhere you want and just buy meat instantly.
How long did it take you to truly understand martial arts and everything about it?
A long time.
And you still don't know everything about
it? No.
Okay. But how many years?
I think I was probably just getting started about 10 years in.
Would you look like, do you think most people would consider you an expert in martial arts?
If not, I don't know who is.
Okay. All right.
I mean, I get paid to do it.
So, okay, you get paid to do it. It's your life. All right. So if I was going to ask you a question about martial arts or a move in martial arts or what it took, you give me a good answer. Okay.
When it comes to most styles, some styles I don't know that much about.
Then it's no different in this. Look, I've watched, I can't tell how many fights that you've done, okay, that you've been color for, okay? And I can sit there and say this or that or the other, but to be inside that ring, I can't imagine what that's like. So I'm not going to say I know what it's like to be one of these ultimate athletes. I can't imagine what that's like. I can't imagine what you have to put your mind through, your family through, everything. It's the exact same thing with this, all right? I've done this since I was 16 years old. Now, I'm not an expert on wildlife management or wildlife biology. I trust experts. When it comes to hunting, pretty close to, you know, you could ask almost everybody in the international hunting community. I think they would say that Corey knows a lot about it. So it's, you have to be in it to really understand it. Okay, you can't just be from the outside in. And what it comes is, there's so much, look, hate and anger are the lowest hanging fruit. It's the easiest thing to reach to. And today we're in an era of rush to outrage. This technological social media world, it's just like a giant boom shift. And I think we're still lost in that. And 20 years ago, if I went on a rhino hunt, nobody would have known about it. Nobody would have cared about it. They know hunting exists. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. And things went along. Now, the squeakiest wheel gets the grease. The people who are the most outraged, okay, they talk about it. They scream about it. And if you're someone who gets a lot of attention, like you're an actor, comedian, whatever, they're looking at these people, you know, at their comments, and they look at the headline. They don't look into it any more than that because we have a very short attention span. News now is headline, 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 headline. Trust me, I know, I've been a part of it. You know, I've talked about the black rhino a lot. It goes away. And if some event came up, it comes right back. And as soon as it comes up, it's gone again. You know, next, and for the animal rights people, there'll be somebody who will kill a dolphin or stab a frog or whatever, and they'll move on to that. So,
have you had a debate with anybody in the animal rights movement?
Lots of them.
And what was their take on this? When you try to explain your point of view, you try to explain that this is an aggressive older male that's not breeding anymore, that had killed at least one young bull, was a danger to the breeding population of an extinct or an endangered, rather,
species. Let me do it again. Animal rights movement, like a hardcore, I've talked to a few of them, okay? And after they get done talking to me, almost every one of them, you know, finds some middle ground, okay? Animal welfare, which was what I would say, there's a huge difference between animal rights and animal welfare. Animal welfare, I promise you, or you and me, nobody wants to see an animal mistreated. Nobody wants to see an animal suffer. We understand that animals are used for part of humanity, and we probably wouldn't survive in the world without them the way we do now. Okay. Animal rights is a total different thing. All right. To some of those people, it's a religion. Okay. It is their life.
I would agree with you.
Okay. You know, somebody like I watched, you know, I really hate it, but there was a person that you did a show you talked with on Opie and Anthony a while back, who's one of the leaders of
Ricky Gervais.
Yeah. And so he comes out and says things, and, you know, he said a bunch of inflammatory things towards me and towards anybody else. Right. And it's about his emotion about it. It's not about if the facts are helping the black rhino survive. These people would rather there not be an interaction with humans and animals. They think the second of freedom of you releasing your pet, okay, some of them, is, and if it got hit by a car right over there, that minute of freedom is better than a lifetime of being Joe Rogan's pet.
They obviously haven't seen my dogs.
Okay, and then they lump animal welfare in with them. They try to make like that they're bigger because they get these animal welfare people, and a lot of those animal welfare people hate that. They don't want to be lumped in with them. You know, because they know that, you know, like Michael J. Fox said, that he didn't look at an ant, the life of an ant, any more or less valuable than the life of his son. You know,
what?
Yeah.
He really said that?
Check it out, bro.
Yeah, but he's got a disease. That shit's fucking with his brain.
Okay,
for sure.
Well, I think this was a long time ago. But anyway, they say a lot of things like that.
That's an insane thing to say.
Okay, but that's obviously, you're talking about a certain, that religious side of it, the ideological side. And the problem they have, really, especially with me, is that I had a gigantic mountain of facts and scientific material, wildlife biology, on my side of the argument, I talked with a guy for a different show. They're doing a documentary on this. It's a show called Radio Lab. I don't know if you know.
Yes,
about it.
Yes, I do. Okay. Yeah. They did love that show.
They did a 2-hour documentary, or I don't know how long it's going to be. They're doing a huge documentary. One of the guys came over with me on this hunt. And I talked with this guy, Robert. I don't know what his last name is, Krolwich or something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know exactly.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of that show.
Okay, so I talked with him at length last week and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
90-minute conversation. And what I found is the more intelligent the person you have this debate with, the much easier the debate is to have. And so I talked to him about it. He didn't get it. He didn't get, like, you know, what drives you or me to go hunting.
Mm-hmm.
But he told me I had one of the best hard arguments, if not the best, that he'd ever gone up against, that this placing value on them is going to keep them around. At the end of it, at the very end of the conversation, he was like, Corey, you know, you have a really great sense of honor for this, and I really respect it. It's refreshing, and I think you're right. And so, but it took 90 minutes of going through, like I said, that ethereal mist mm-hmm. of all the BS that's out here about this subject.
Manufactured outrage.
Okay. And a lot of times why people are profiting off of it. I mean, PETA, you know, killing all these pets, you know, however many they have.
Yeah, that's a hard part for people to swallow.
Okay.
If they don't know. Yeah. Tell people if they don't know the facts behind it.
Well, they're
that.
Killing thousands of pets a year.
They just euthanize them because they can't take care of them. They don't have the
They're just
facilities.
Killing them. Okay, so it's extremely hypocritical. And
how the fuck did they justify that? There's no kill animal shelters. I don't understand how they don't run something like that.
Look, spay and neuter your pets. If all the pets are spayed or neutered, there ain't going to be any pets left.
Right.
Okay, you're dealing with almost psychotic level ideological people.
You know what my favorite ones are?
Who?
The people who break into restaurants and release lobsters back into the ocean.
That's great. You know, I can tell you this. For these people who called up called me, sent me messages, threatened to kill my children, threatened to burn my house down, rape my wife, every single thing that you could ever imagine. I mean, for those people to say they're going to do that, it just in and of itself is ridiculous and hypocritical.
Right.
Okay, you're against killing, but you're willing to kill me.
You want to kill and rape and kill your children, kill babies.
Absolutely.
That had nothing to do with the rhino at all.
It had nothing to do with any of it. Look, my wife hunts. My kids hunt. I guess they want to kill them for that. They want to kill them. Look, I'm mad. It's not about what you're doing. It's about my feelings. And my feelings are more important than what you're doing and if it's right or wrong.
And what they want to do is show you somehow or another what it's like to be feared. Or to be in fear, to be
you know how many people came
hated.
To my face, Joe, and said one thing?
How about zero? Yeah, zero. Yeah, most okay. people wouldn't.
Okay. And I will sit here and talk with any of them.
Well, I think that's a real problem with social media. The real problem is anonymity and the lack of the social consequences. If I look at you in the eye and I say something really fucked up to you, and you raise your eyebrows at me like, what the fuck did you just say? And then I feel that, and you feel it, and I feel it. But when you just say something mean on Facebook, it hits that person, you say, I hope your fucking whole family dies in a fire. You know, those rhinos are majestic. You go on about your day. You don't even get a response back. You don't feel anything back.
Yeah, and that makes them mad, too, but I responded to lots of them.
Well, I just retweet them. I let other people respond. I had a bunch of people angry at me because I went bear hunting, and I just retweeted a lot of their shit. And like, you're a bully. You know, you're a bully. You sick your fucking followers. I didn't sick anybody. You put some shit on the internet, I let people know about it. I didn't even say anything. Go ahead, look at it.
Do you feel, and how many people came out after you about the bear?
A lot. But I feel like there was a tremendous amount of ignorance on their part, first of all, because I do eat bear. People were saying, you know, you're killing it, you're not eating it. I absolutely eat it. I like eating them. They're delicious, and you have to keep the population down. And you also, you're dealing with an animal that kills the fawns of all the moose, all the elk, all the deer that live up there.
Your facts are getting in the way of their feelings.
It's true. Well, it's also what Steve Rinella has this great phrase. It's called charismatic megafauna, and the anthropomorphication of these animals like Yogi Bear and mm-hmm. Winnie the Pooh, they are locked into people's heads. These fucking Disney depictions of bears are locked in people's heads.
This is what's saving the animals to death.
Well, you know what it is just it's not doing a damn thing, but getting riled up.
The outrage of it's keeping people. Look, it kept the contribution for more money going. You see what I'm saying?
In California, it's fucking up a lot of things. California, these ideas have actually. I mean, California doesn't even have a fish and game department. They have a fish and wildlife.
Yeah, well, they can call it what
they call it what they call it. It's run by people who are more animal activists than they are pro-hunting. They have no mountain lion season here.
Yeah.
And because of that, there's a lot of fucking mountain lions.
No doubt about it.
There's a place called Tejon Ranch that I hunt out of. They have one water hole that they have a trail cam on. They found 16 different mountain lions.
So what's in balance about that? What's in balance about that?
There's no balance. It's okay. Crazy. The guys who work on the ranch, they don't like it at all. Not a goddamn thing they can do unless one of them is threatening. Unless one of them takes out livestock or becomes a threat to people, they can't do a damn thing about it. And when that does happen, then they have to fill out all this paperwork. It becomes like a huge nightmare. They get investigated.
Mm-hmm. That's why we have a ton of game animals in Texas, and we don't have a ton of mountain lions.
And that's how it should be. It's not like the mountain lion population is endangered.
Not in any way, shape, or form.
But they're goddamn predators, and they don't give a fuck about your kids. They don't give a fuck about your mom. They don't give a fuck about anybody that might have to be on that trail.
You're not going
to
have the predators for ethical treatment of humans.
Yeah, do you think mountain lions get tweeted when they kill someone's dog?
We're dealing with an extreme hypocritical situation. We're dealing with an extreme lack of knowledge about the subject matter, and we're dealing with people's emotions. And look, I have a lot of compassion for their emotions. I understand it, okay? I care about these animals, too. They may not get it, okay? And to me, I've definitely did everything I could from a personal standpoint of once I was involved with this situation. I went to the more liberal media outlets to bring it to this. Okay, I could have gone on Fox News, and I've been preaching to the choir.
Right.
And I brought CNN with me on the hunt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you did.
Okay, so I went over there. I was very, very honest and upfront with them about everything that I went through, everything they saw. They came and saw the entire thing. And so what I've seen is they got attacked because they said, oh, this was a ridiculous, you know, y'all were so behind him and involved with this. Man, that is crap.
Well, you know what that is if you don't share the opinions of the people that oppose it, then you're some sort of a shill.
They did. They did.
They did.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, once they get there, and that's the reality of the situation. I mean, I had some conversations with people about this when this thing went down, and I said, look, I'm not going over there to shoot any rhinos. I have no desire to shoot a rhino, but you got to pay attention to what you're talking about because you can't just talk shit and say this guy's an asshole and this rhino didn't need to be killed. You have to look at it from a balanced perspective, objectively, with no ideology attached to it. And when you do that, you realize that there's a lot of people, a lot of conservationists, a lot of biologists who are pro culling of certain animals in any population to keep that population healthy. It seems counterintuitive, but it's important.
What seems counterintuitive about it?
Well, it seems counterintuitive to the people outside. I'm going to kill an animal to save the animal.
Let's talk about the term endangered for a second. Okay. You cool with that?
Yes.
Okay. Very crude drawing here of Africa. And let's say that if an animal is up here.
Okay.
And then you have an animal down here. Those are two separate populations.
So you made Africa, you cut it in half.
And I went to east and I went to south.
Okay.
Okay. So, or what they consider East Africa.
Right.
All right. If an animal up here is in trouble, and there's tons of them down here, you're going to see, whatever animal it is, but just, I'm not going to use any specific, on endangered, mm-hmm. when this animal of the same species is fine.
Right.
Okay.
Well, but also because Africa is fucking gigantic.
It's gigantic. This is, if you look at Africa, this is the United States.
Yeah, we've shown that on the set before. We've taken an image of the continent of Africa, and you could put everything in there. You put China in there. You put United States in
everything
there. South
Russia.
America. Yeah, Russia's pretty goddamn big.
Well, I flew across Russia one time, 9 hours, and never left the country.
Whoa, that's a big ass country.
So anyway, if the animal up here is, it's going to be on the endangered species list, even though it's fine down here.
Right.
Okay, so for instance, in Namibia, if you pull up, go ahead and pull up southwestern black rhino on Wikipedia. Okay, and I'll kind of walk you through this a little bit. I want to see him pull it up, and let's see if he pulls up the right one.
Southwestern black rhino is a different...
Subspecies.
Subspecies. Oh, okay. Okay. So it varies genetically in some sort of way?
Okay. Now, look right there at the conservation status mm-hmm. of the southwestern black rhino.
Conservation status. Okay, what does that say? VU. Threatened? Vulnerable?
Vulnerable. Does it not say endangered?
No, it doesn't say endangered. It says vulnerable. What's the difference?
Wow.
Why is it wow?
Because it's not endangered. In Namibia, it's not endangered. It's considered vulnerable.
Okay.
Okay, and that's the IUCN list, bro.
Mm-hmm.
That's the list that everyone looks to.
So least concern is the highest level.
Least concern is black bass, white-tailed deer.
Okay, and then what's NT?
NT is near threatened.
Near threatened. So okay. It goes from least concern to near threat. That seems like a kind of a biased designation to begin with. It's not healthy population isn't even on the list. It's just least concern.
Yeah, and even when you get into vulnerable, okay, you get in there least concern, it's not a concern of going endangered.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's a healthy population, whatever. It's not a concern of going endangered.
But it's right next to endangered. That's the next distinction.
It's right next to threatened.
VU is
look
vulnerable.
Above, least concern, least concern, threatened, extinct. Okay? And then you have EW is extinct in the wild.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so you have to get into this.
Okay.
The reason that they're not endangered on this is because Namibia has a surplus amount of them. Okay, in Namibia, it's not an endangered situation. They have a surplus amount.
Right, when you say surplus, people say, like, this guy's talking about widgets. You're talking about tires.
Because
you're talking about
things.
Carburetors.
I'm not, look,
you know what I'm saying?
I don't have a degree in economics.
But you know what I'm saying? Like the term surplus to a living thing, it gets people weirded out.
It's 7 billion humans or whatever we're at. Is there enough of us?
I think there's a surplus, people.
Okay. So my point is you get into that. In Namibia, they have a surplus amount.
Okay. So what is the population?
I think, I can't tell you exactly, but it's... I think believe more than 2,000. You know, it'll say on that. Yeah.
And the black rhinos, the ones that you hunted, are different or the same as this particular?
That's the one I hunted.
That's the one you hunted.
Yeah.
So there's a few thousand of them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that subspecies in Namibia.
And is there other black rhinos? There's different kinds of black rhinos?
Yeah, there's different subspecies of black rhinos. Like, for instance, when you were saying the one that was going extinct, mm-hmm. the one that went extinct, there was a western black rhino that went extinct.
And what is the difference in these rhinos? Like, how can they tell the difference?
It's just genetics? Different taxonomy, different things about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, different.
Like
you know,
a mule
different
deal versus a blacktail.
No. That would be two different species.
But it's really close.
That would be a desert mule deer versus a Rocky Mountain mule deer.
Oh, okay.
Something like that.
Well, like mule deer are weird, where the designation is the I-5. Like east of the I-5, it's a blacktail. West, it's a mule deer.
Yeah, that's another right there.
But
along
they're essentially
that,
they the
be,
same
right
animal.
There, they could be. Essentially the same. It's just like this is transferring over. Right,
right. But if you shot one, it would be considered a mule deer in a specific location. If you shot the exact same animal across the I-5, it'd be a blacktail.
That day he's a blacktail, yeah.
So this is not like that with these rhinos. It's more...
No, you're talking about more...
Distinct diversity.
Like I said, here, mm-hmm. here.
Okay.
They're total separate populations.
So they have these animals. They know that there's a fairly healthy amount of them, and they're trying to maintain and grow the population
right.
through the resource of the actual animal themselves. So by auctioning off this big game hunt and spending $350,000, they then take all this money. It's accounted for very meticulously. It all goes into this conservation fund. It all pays for... What, rangers and what is it?
All sorts of different things. It went into the Namibian Game Products Trust Fund, and it has a list of these things. You could pull that up, too, mm-hmm. I'm sure, if you wanted to. I mean, but it's a list of things. You're going through it.
Okay.
Okay, so, you know, basically, it had, for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife to allow the importation of it, they had to find a non-detriment finding, meaning that the taking of this animal is not detriment to the species, and it had to have a positive finding as well, positive benefit, okay? Mm-hmm. To the species.
So do you have this animal now?
No.
Are you eventually going to get it?
Yes.
So are they stuffing it for you?
No, it's still in. It has to go through a process before it's imported in the United States. I mean, it's only been, I don't know how long, it's not been a month since I hunted the animal.
So they take it and they're going to ship it to you? Do they taxiderm?
No, that'll happen over here.
Okay. And you will just put this in your house or something like
that? Well, I mean, like I said, I've said this a lot of times, and I have to look through it through what the permit actually allows me to do as my personal property. I can't ever sell it. I can't do stuff like that. Okay.
Right.
But what I want to do, and I'm going to talk to them about this once it gets here, can I loan it to different museums, put it on display at different places, you know, to keep awareness alive about it. I never was in this because I was like, oh, I can't wait to have a black rhino. That's not what I was in this for.
Well, what were you in it for? Like, what was your ultimate goal when you decided to spend that money and take that trip and shoot that rhino?
I have a belief system in sustainable use as a, and within that, hunting as a tool of sustainable use to keep animals alive.
So did you recognize that this was a high profile situation and it would be something that you could use as a platform?
No, I didn't recognize that. I mean, I was told that day when we had the auction that my name wouldn't come out for a while. It came out like within a few hours of the auction. Somebody tweeted it. It wasn't even supposed to be spoke of right then. And then it came out and I kind of felt, to be honest, bullied. You know, I was like, you know, I believed in this enough to be a part of it. Now it's out. It is what it is. I can't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't my desire. Okay. I knew it would eventually come out. And I don't think anybody could have expected what would happen with it. I mean, I didn't expect to the degree of it. I've seen other things, but I've never seen anything to this degree.
Well, we live in a new world. You know, we live in a world of instant outrage and instant reaction to that outrage. You know, if this had taken place 20 years ago, you really had no recourse. No one, I mean, even if they got upset in their small groups. They read the paper together. Like, someone, did you see this? This guy shot a rhino. Fuck that guy. And that'd be the end of it. There was no way to reach out to
you. Yeah, now that conversation is for everybody to see.
Yes. For everybody to see, everybody to join in, everybody to take the moral high ground, and very few people to take a nuanced, objective look at it and realize, wow, like, there's a lot of gray area, many things in life.
I'll tell you a real interesting deal when it first happened. Some children whose parents were activists, okay, they wrote me a letter about why I was doing this, okay?
They told you why you were doing it?
No, they asked me not to do it, and they did this letter, okay? And I did this interview with these kids. I had, like, this guy was doing a documentary about them or whatever came down and asked me if I would talk to them. And they're kids, which, you know, I understood that. I was very nice and very calm and cool with them. I have been with everybody, really. And they asked me a lot of questions that were really, you know, to me, I considered, you know, almost like common knowledge type questions. But then I asked them this. And I said, if there's three black rhinos left, okay, and let's say it's one male or two males and a cow or whatever, and one's killing the other two, can you shoot that black rhino? Okay, they're going to be gone. You don't have time to think about it. This is the moment. Can you kill that rhino to save the species? Okay. And the boy, the older boy, kind of got it. This is deep in the conversation. This is after, you know, 30 minutes in. He was kind of coming around, okay? But the girl was younger, and she was pretty much stuck with it. But I pressed her. I was like, well, you know, look, you've asked me all these questions. I've answered everything. Can you do this? You know, if you really believe in the survival of these black rhino. And she's like, I just don't know. And I was like, well, that's why we have experts that do know, and that they exist, and that they're in charge of this. And so you yourself, Joe, could you kill that black rhino? Would you kill that black rhino to save the species?
Yeah.
Okay. It just immediately, boom.
It just seems like if one of them is trying to kill the other one, and you're talking about an it's a pragmatic answer to a complex question.
That's right.
You have to do it.
You have to do it.
Or you have to let them go extinct. Those are your two options.
That's your options right now.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
And if the one kills the other one, and who knows if he dies in the process, because it's not like the one's going to let the other one kill him. They're going to fight. They're going to impale each other with those fucking horns.
Yeah.
They might get infected and die, and they might be the end of it right there.
So, that to me, that's albeit an extremely oversimplified question to a very complicated thing.
Right.
Okay, when you're dealing with these wildlife experts that put this together, that's kind of the question they're going through. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's part of the question. But it's very complicated when you start putting value on things and trying to figure out which rhinos, which, you know, way, which method, which place, which community with all these things. That's the big question. What are we going to do to keep these animals alive? And unfortunately for these animals, they cannot afford the morality of the average person and the average person's thought process on this. They can't afford it. Okay, they need experts, they need money, and they need a value. Anytime you put a hunting license on something, you put a value on it. Okay, the second season of Professionals, we went down to Paraguay, and we went and darted jaguars. Okay, they didn't have hunting.
But you say darted them? Tranquilizing them?
Tranquilized them.
So they could tag them? Is that what
we put collars on them, radio mm-hmm. collars, and we moved one. Okay? And we moved it to get it out of an area where it was a threat of being poached by the local Indian tribe. Unfortunately, 2 weeks later, it went back to that same area, and they killed it. Okay? They're like, we'll give you the jaguar hide, but, you know, we want $80 for this collar. Okay? It meant nothing to them. It had no value on it. Now, had that jaguar been worth $20,000 or anything to their community, they'd have done anything in the world to protect it. It's that simple. I mean, if you have gold running around in your backyard, you're not going to protect it? That's why I have such a real issue with people like not understanding this. Just imagine this. This rhino's horn on the black market's worth whatever it's worth, three times the weight of gold, something like that.
That's insane.
Okay. All right. Now that's on a black illegal market. Now, if you put a value of it, three times the weight of gold, on an illegal market, and you have no value on it in a legal market, what's going to happen?
People are going to kill it, and they're going to sell it illegally.
Okay, let's talk about, you know, I mean, I don't know how far I'm going with this and if it's even the right direction, but if you just put a blanket no, okay, how well would that work, like, in something like keeping people from doing drugs? How well did it work on alcohol in the 20s? Okay, blanket no. And then you take enforcement out of it. How well would it work?
Doesn't work at all.
Okay. In Paraguay, they had no way to enforce their laws. They had no people out in the field doing it. So what's going to happen? It's not worth anything. The animals are going to get poached.
Because they're worth something dead.
Those weren't even worth anything. Nobody's paying them anything for it. They were a negative benefit to the community. They were, we're worried about our goat.
They were killing goats.
They're killing whatever.
So they're killing them just to protect their livestock.
Yeah, and their life. Look, I mean, the idea of death by wild animal isn't something we deal with here in the United States.
Rarely.
Very rarely. But, I mean, you're not walking down the streets of L.A. thinking this mountain lion's going to freaking rip my head off today. Okay, if you're in, like, Zambia, and you're rolling down in the evening time in rural Zambia, okay, and you're on a bike, you're thinking a lion might be around here. Okay, and you know people who've been killed by a lion. It's a different thing. Okay, now let's say you live out there, Joe. This lion's worth nothing to you, alive, okay? Now you go out there, it's killed some of your livestock. Your property's damaged. What are you going to do?
You're going to kill the lion.
Okay, it's killed your child. What are you going to do?
You're going to kill the lion.
Okay, now if you know there's no benefit coming, why not poison around here? Let's put some poison in this. We'll kill the whole pride.
And that's what they wind up doing.
That's exactly what they wind up doing a lot of places.
People, I think, have a real issue with monetary, like attaching money, attaching a monetary value to life.
People have a real issue with lots of things. Joe, there's people who don't. The thing I learned about my situation was you don't realize how many people hate you just because whatever you believe. Okay. You know, if you're a Christian, there's people that hate you. If you're Muslim, there's people that hate you. If you're an atheist, there's people that hate you. If you're gay, there's people that hate you. If you're this, they're just not exposed to that level of hate. I got exposed to the level of hate that people have for me. Okay. Back in the day, you lived your life. I lived my life. It was almost more of a libertarian existence because I would never have anything to do with you.
Right.
Okay. And today on social media, I'm in a room with thousands of people that hate me anytime I get on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they hated me to the extent my Facebook's gone, dude.
Did you delete it?
No! I can't get on it. It won't allow me to get on it.
What do you mean?
It won't allow me to get on it. If I do it right now, I'll do it in front of you. It says it's disabled. I put my email address in there. It says it doesn't recognize it.
So did somebody hack it?
They had to have.
Did you contact Facebook?
Through all these things, through their method, and then I'm just like, I'm done with it. You know, I couldn't figure it out. I'm done. I mean, I'm not the computer genius or whatever. And I had tons of people, under 20,000 people, you know, and there were just mainly a lot of those were 100, but it's gone. And so they took my voice out of it right there.
Well,
but
that's
in a lot of ways, it was good for my family. If you look at it like these four walls, like Joe's got to go home, he's got to be with his kids, his family, right? My mom, my wife would go on there. They'd look at all the hate and it'd make them upset. I mean, I got skin thicker than the rhino now. You could have whoever in the world sitting over here telling me whatever. And I mean,
this because of this?
Absolutely.
What was it like when it first started coming at you?
A different story.
What was that like?
Like just a giant rage, you know, different, like raging wall of emotion. You know, like I'm angry, I'm upset, you know, things like that. But you realize that what made me feel a lot better was a lot of the people that would just say, you know, karma type threats, you know, wish you die, I hope you get cancer, whatever. I would respond to them when they'd send me those messages. 9 out of 10, maybe even more than that, said it was just a knee-jerk reaction and apologized. They realized there was a human on the other side of it.
So you think when they see you on CNN or they see you on a website, or they see your face, a photograph, they don't necessarily think of you as a person.
No.
They think of you as an expression of something they disagree with.
Here's a name on something I don't like.
And you went back and forth with these people for a few days, or how long did you
I mean, usually the first message.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, if I still had it, I could show you.
How much time did you spend doing this?
Lots. I cared.
Did you ever reach out to Ricky Gervais?
I would. I'd love to talk to him about it. You know, I mean, look, he's a comedian. He can probably get it. I searched his name, you know. And
well, he loves animals.
Yeah. I searched his name, and it came up right underneath Ricky Martin. It's probably a good place for him.
How dare you?
I mean,
he's living La Vida Loca. Leave him alone.
Yeah,
in
both
Miami.
Of them. Look, man. Look, whatever. I'm open-minded to it. I honestly think if he was sitting here with me, you've sat with him, what would he say?
Well, when I talked to him, he didn't have any problem with what I was doing. I told him that I hunt for food. I mean, I don't hunt things that I don't eat. And I practice very hard, make sure that if I shoot something, it dies quick. That's very ethical. And there was really not much you could say. I don't even know if he's a vegetarian. Is he a vegetarian?
I don't know, man. Look, man, I'm living my life with my kids, bro.
I understand.
Okay.
I've had arguments with people online. I found out that they had a dog. And I'm like, what do you feed your dog, motherfucker?
Yeah.
What are you feeding your dog?
Look,
angel farts?
Honestly, Joe, if you could bring him here, if you could get that dude to come here and sit with me, I would love nothing more than it. You know, any of them. I'll talk to anybody about it.
Do you think that there's like a certain social currency to standing up for animals? A certain social currency to taking that photo, putting it online, and going, how dare you?
What do you?
You
think, man?
I think there is.
Absolutely, yeah. There is.
I think people do certain things not just because they believe it, but also they put it out there because they want everyone to know they believe it, because it jazzes them up.
Honestly, if he was here, I would show him nothing but love. I care about him as a human being, and, you know, he called me a murdering scumbag.
Is that okay? What he did? How dare he?
Yeah, whatever.
What about the rhino? You shot a murderer.
It doesn't matter.
You're like a cop.
The facts doesn't matter.
You're like a rhino cop.
So, look, if he was here, I'd hug him. I'd be nice to him. I'd tell jokes with him. Okay, look,
okay.
I understand. Hey, look,
understand.
Here's the thing. I understand that I was in front of him as an agenda. He's a comedian, okay, and he is he's a professional comedian.
Right.
Okay, and he feels passionate about stuff. Okay, he can say what he wants, and I'm sure he can take a joke as good as he can give a joke. Hope so.
Yes, he can.
Okay,
sure.
So I don't have a problem with that. I understand that I was just something for him to talk about that day. It doesn't bother me. I don't take any of this stuff, you know, maybe just a tad personally. It would be inhuman to say I don't take all of it personally. I take some of it personally. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But
well, that's a very healthy approach to it. That'll definitely help you.
I mean, what are you going to do? Am I going to sit there and look at all the anger and hate in the world and let that change me? If you sit with the devil, you don't change. I mean, the devil doesn't change, you do.
The consequences of actually acquiring food are just so much more brutal than people want to imagine. Chicken McNuggets aside, even getting grain. You know, I watched this thing on the machines that they use to get corn and wheat from fields. Those fucking things are brutal. They chop down everything that's in that field, and they catch fawns and rabbits and squirrels and just anything that gets in front of those wheels just gets churned up and sliced apart. So the only way you're going to buy grain is, you're going to buy it in a store unless you're growing your own grain and picking it by hand. You're most likely involved in some sort of animal murder, whether you want to believe it or not. It's the reality of being a human being in these
They're trying to
times.
Disconnect us from who we are and what we are as regards the cycle of life.
Well, don't you think they're trying to do that because they are disconnected by the system that they subsist in?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that was one of the main reasons why I wanted to get into hunting, because I recognized a big contradiction. And as a comedian, as a person who thinks about shit a lot, I look at things that don't make any sense, and I just go, how come this doesn't make any sense, and so many people just accept it?
You just hit it. You said, as a person who thinks about things a lot, okay? You didn't say a person to react to everything that I see immediately, okay? You have the benefit of time, Joe. Mm-hmm. You have the benefit of self-reflection, all right? I read about you a little bit. You said you did the self-deprivation chambers, all these things, right? You're trying to find out who you are as a person, and you're trying to find out where you're at as a person. You're questioning things. You're questioning things, thoughts and feelings and emotions you have. Okay, I don't think, by and large, a lot of people that live everyday life have the opportunity to do that or take the opportunity to do that. I don't think a lot of people do.
I think you're probably right. And I think there's also the reality that we're all under the influence of the momentum of culture. And when cultures accepts certain types of behavior, and certain types of behavior are not prevalent, like hunting, that those types of behavior that aren't prevalent get mocked or minimalized or misunderstood. And that I think when you deal with the system that we all operate under, there's a few people that are really aware of what the system really truly is. And those are the people that work in the slaughterhouses. Those are the people that breed the cattle. Those are the people that work in these insane, confined chicken factories where they just stuff all these fucking animals, where they've made laws where you're not allowed to take photos. You can go to jail if you work in one of those plants, or if you sneak into one of those plants and take photos of the ridiculously inhumane conditions at these chickens and these pigs. There's different states have made laws because it's inconvenient for people to know the truth. It's like no different than the outrage that people had when you couldn't show coffins, when you couldn't show American flag draped coffins. They were putting a ban on them in the media after the Gulf War started, and people were freaking now that, like, look, this is my fucking family dying over there. You're telling me you can't take a picture of the coffin that my family's on because you don't want people to know the reality of people dying? Well, that's insane. It's information. It's all it is. And when they're trying to keep information from you in any way, shape, or form, that's always bad. Make your own fucking opinions. Devise your own opinion or come up with your own opinions on things. But you have to be able to have access to information to have a really informed opinion.
Well, and there's not been a day and age that I think we've had more access to information. And it seems like people would rather get outraged than informed.
Well, it takes a long time to get informed about this shit. People think that the, you know.
I agree. To be fully informed, yes. You could have watched these CNN stuff that we did. And right. You'd had a pretty good idea.
A decent idea.
Okay. And at least if you read into the article, you'd know where to go. Right? You could know to go to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife page and look at it. But what happens is people have strong emotions about it. And then they have what, you know, opinion bias, right? Mm-hmm. I don't agree with that because it doesn't back up what I believe.
Right. And you can get confirmation bias online going to 100 different websites that are anti-hunting and anti...
The world's foremost experts agreed on it. Okay. And like, and again, I'm not trying to get away from what the point you're trying to make is that people don't have a real idea of the reality of the machine that feeds us.
Exactly.
Okay. They don't understand that they don't have a personal relationship when they bite into a quarter pounder with the cow in the way that my great grandmother who ran a dairy would.
They look at a quarter pounder the way most people look at a potato.
Okay.
It just doesn't seem like anything.
And the people, look, just being around you seem pretty open-minded about things. I don't see as you looking across here at the person that's going to judge me for whatever, okay? The people who are judging us about this, by and large, are doing it while eating a hamburger and having a Louis Vuitton purse, okay? They need to look within themselves and say, is the enjoyment that I get from having this Louis Vuitton purse or eating this hamburger, what is different about that enjoyment than Joe Blow gets from shooting a duck? Okay. He's enjoying hunting. He's enjoying shooting a duck. Okay. You're enjoying, I'm loving this burger. I'm loving this steak. I'm loving these shoes I got. I'm loving my leather seats and my BMW. Okay. Is your enjoyment more validated than his? What's the difference here?
It's a good point. It is a good point that you will get people that are absolutely outraged about hunting or absolutely outraged about the death of any animal, and yet they're driving down the street and there's just murdered animal skins everywhere you look. On people's shoes, on people's bodies, in their cars, in their briefcases covered in animal skins. Every convenience store you stop at has meat sticks and those fucking ground up things that they turn into burritos, and every restaurant, everywhere you look,
there is no bounds to the hypocrisy of it. Okay, now if you're 100% real, legit, true D vegan, okay, who makes sure that on the level of growing in his backyard, he's not affecting any animal's life other than his house took up a place that an animal could live, okay? So if you're that guy, I kind of, all right, you know, I get you. If you're not that guy, then where are you at with this?
Right.
Okay, and why do you, if you're not going to go over to Africa, or you're not going to go to Asia, you're not going to go to the third world and either help fund or personally put your butt on the ground and live to save these things and protect these things and care about these things and be intimately involved with their life, then what are you doing? Where are you at with this personally? People need to ask themselves these questions. What value does a black rhino have to you?
It's another interesting aspect that people get upset if you do enjoy what you're doing. If you enjoy hunting, if somehow or another you get some sort of pleasure out of this hunt, then it's bad. What they would like you to do is do it with total somber thinking and
I would say lots of, you know, I'd say probably the majority of hunters have absolutely, at least in the very minimal, a certain degree of reverence for the animal. And like someone like Jim, who, you know, I have never met anybody that had more reverence for an animal. Okay. And like, and I learned a ton from being around him, and he went to extremes. And like, we would talk about this. We're representing hunters on this show. Okay. We're representing hunters. What we're doing, hunters are going to watch this. Okay. We would talk about how we wouldn't step over the animal. Okay. Now, you know, look,
you mean if it's down,
we wouldn't step over it. We'd walk around them. We'd do everything. We'd care for them. We'd try to kill them as quickly and painlessly as possible. We'd talk and learn everything we could about them.
Why would you not step over them?
We just didn't think it was right.
So you had a conversation about this?
Lots.
Yeah.
Okay. And like, you know, understand, like, when we cut the cameras are off and now we're dealing with it, we're moving around the animal to cut it apart, to quarter it, right? To take care of the meat. All right. But right now at this moment, especially the immediate moment after the life of the animal's taken and leading up to it. Like I said on the show, I was emotional after I shot the rhino. If anybody looks at it, you can go back and look at the Nepal episodes we did. We went to Nepal. We hunted with these Nepalese Sherpas, okay, who lots of them were Buddhist. So you understand Buddhism, a lot of them didn't want to harm animals, right? And they hunted and they understood it. Okay. Why, in a real way.
How does that work if they hunt, they, but they're Buddhists?
They took people to kill it. They were part of it.
Did they eat it?
Yeah, those people ate it. Dude, those people ate it.
The Buddhists ate it.
Yeah. Look, you're on the side of the mountain. You're surviving.
Mm-hmm. There's just no other options.
They eat rice or whatever. I don't know which ones ate what. Okay.
But a lot of them ate it.
Yeah, I saw people eating it.
Because there's just not a lot of options for nutrition.
You're up there and you're living. But anyway, so I'm living with these people. And these people, like, you've developed relationships on a hunt. Would you say the relationships you develop hunting are any different? Have you noticed anything different about it?
They're very intense. Very, very. You get a bond. You understand a certain aspect of a person when you see them tested. And, like, especially a mountain hunt, when you go hiking on these mountains and you see people pushed, you see people that are willing to pussy out. See people that get too tired too quick, they get mentally weak, and you see people who don't, and you see what their character is about when they're pushed, when you're in a dangerous situation, when you are you're forced to be quiet, you're forced to be patient, you're forced to be disciplined, you find out what someone's made of, because a lot of people are fucked up. A lot of people are all ADD'd up and they can't pay attention and they don't know how to stay focused and be a contributing factor in a successful hunt. And that's one of the reasons why I think men in general, we have an aversion to people who are loud but aren't saying anything, call too much attention to themselves, have a distorted perception of their own abilities. I think a lot of that boils down to that would make a very unsuccessful hunter. And I think these things are ingrained in our DNA. I think there's a part of what makes what people value in human beings, what people value in masculine traits, is ability to hold your own mud, ability to stay calm under pressure, ability to come through when the chips are on the line. And I think you learn a lot about someone when you hunt with them. You learn a lot about whether or not someone can keep it together when they have the shot lined up, whether they can, you know, draw back on a 7-foot black bear and make the right shot.
Yeah. And so you have different relationships and different bonds. Okay. It's part of, like, you think about people hunting mastodon, hunting whatever, okay, throughout history, thinking about the Indians, okay, think about everything, even, you know, Europeans. There's things that happen on a hunt that aren't going to happen in daily life. They're just not. And especially on a rural, wild situation where you are aware of what's going on around you and your actions have immediate consequences. Okay, Jim and I had a rule, and Jim, I don't know if Jim came up with it or whatever, but we talked about it daily, and it was the 5 rules of hunting. Safety, 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 safety. That's it. What ain't a successful hunt if somebody breaks their leg or dies? Okay, and we know a lot of people who are dead. Okay, and we would talk about this extensively, and we'd talk about, you know, situations that we'd be in when we'd see people go, you know, that would go bad and compounded human error. You learn a lot about who you are. And I've taken tons of people, Joe, that had never hunted before. People who are against it, whatever. I've taken them from all walks of life, from the wealthiest people that exist on the planet to the poorest people that exist on the planet. And once you get out and you go on that hunt and you're next to it, it doesn't matter if you're a mega famous star, it doesn't matter what you are, you're all on the ground level. You're all on the same level. If you all have packs on, you're all equal, and it's about what we're doing. And the emotion of that happens in the bonding, you know, like, for instance, Joe, if you and I were on the side of the mountain in Pakistan or Mongolia, or we'd be with these people and we're sitting here, we have these bonds with them. We're caring about them. You think about their lives. You think about how you can help them financially. You think about all these things, you know. I mean, you're bringing a lot of money over there. You're bringing a lot of just items like pocket knives and packs and stuff that mean a lot to them. You become personally involved with these people. And you and I become more personally involved and learn about our lives, learn about things about our family. We talk about these things because we have the time to do it when we're out there, okay? And then you find, if there's a situation where, you know, like, you know, you've been in when people can die. Okay. I've been in those situations numerous times and I've seen people get hurt. I've seen all sorts of things. And you're tied into who we are as human beings, that in a sense to where a lot of times people don't understand what that is until maybe they're in a car accident, right? They had a traumatic event or something. Okay. That's most people probably haven't seen something die, you know? And so it's, you know, in real life, you know, outside, maybe they hit a dog or a squirrel or something, you know, or especially your actions that cause the death of this animal, you become closer to who you are and what life really is. And life, I promise you, becomes more meaningful, I believe, because of this. I think you put a more value on life when you've been in these situations. I personally saw the way that I changed as a human throughout it.
It definitely broadens the spectrum of what you think are experiences. Yeah. It gives you a completely different kind of experience. And in a lot of ways, one of the oddest things that I found about hunting is, in a lot of ways, it's psychedelic in that way. Like, there's something about locking eyes with an animal that's in the wild that you're hunting. Mm-hmm. You're not thinking about anything other than that moment, and there's this weird bond that you have with this animal. And when you take that animal and eat it, there's a strange high that comes from it. And it's not a high like you don't know where the fuck you are or you're drugged up. There's like an elevated senses sort of a thing. There's a connection to life itself that's very unusual, and it changes your perception of life outside of that.
Yeah. I think for each person it's different, but I can tell like when you're talking right now and when you're looking at me as you're talking about it, like you're very in touch with who you are as a person. You're very in touch with how these things have affected you as Joe Rogan or whoever you know, the person you are. I think that's one of the best things about hunting is that when you're out there, if it's your family, if it's your friends, you know, hunting's largely a social thing. Okay. Now, like in instances, like, you know, the extreme cases where people who, like, you look throughout history, Kermit Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt, okay, exploring type things, a different type of person. Even Jim is a different type of person. You know, I'm a totally different type of person. Okay. When you're drawn to these things, it becomes a real fabric of who you are. What you're talking about, just eating the animal and everything, it's a fabric thing of who you are as a person, and you're in touch with what you understand, that the actions you took resulted in the death of a very real thing. And the death of that really thing, real thing, is sustaining your life at that point. And that's the cycle of life. And you're talking about the emotions you feel in it. You know, there's a lot of hunters that wouldn't even get it the way that you got it, okay, because you've thought about it. You know, if they just went, it's just so, like, it's such a complex thing. And that's why when people ask me, well, how do you feel when you kill it? How are you going to feel when you kill this black rhino? It's so important. About the two things that were most important to people was how I was going to feel about it and the money aspects of it. Okay. Like, it's almost like a crime to have money anymore. I think people look at money as a negative thing, but everybody wants it. I'm lost with that. Okay. And some things I just give up on trying to understand, I guess.
Well, it's the vast majority of people who feel like that don't have it. That's what it is. It's almost like looks, like someone who's really beautiful, like that there's something negative about it. Like a beautiful woman has to be stupid.
Yeah. If you think making money is hard, try keeping money in this world.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
Especially if you're spending $350,000 to kill rhinos. Yeah, it goes quick.
Yeah, exactly. It goes really quick. You know,
your show that you did with Jim Shockey, that Uncharted show.
Yeah,
I didn't see The Professionals, but I'm a big fan of that Uncharted show, and it's a really fascinating show because it got to show a side of you you don't really see too much of on those type of shows. And
no,
the Pakistan episode in particular, where you didn't want to go to Pakistan, you had been there before. It's dangerous as fuck.
At that time, it was real dangerous.
Your family didn't want you going over there?
Nobody wanted me going over there. And I'd been over there twice, you know. And I'd put them, they'd all live that twice. You know, I've been over there like pre-drones and post-drones. Mm-hmm. And the mentality of people were totally different.
Really?
Absolutely.
Drones changed everything.
Drones changed everything.
Fuck. Well, okay. What's the difference?
I mean, we were hunting in very rural areas. Okay, we're hunting with people who outside of the advent of the tractor and the cell phone live like biblical times. Okay. They could not grasp a lot of the things about our world. A lot of them think that we blew up our own towers. Okay. I mean, they get media in a different way. They get information a different way. Their attitude was just very, very different. There was a lot of people that were very, I think it struck a lot of fear in people. And so it's just a totally different thing. And so to regards to the show, not going over there on that hunt, I'd already been there twice. I felt like, and Brandlin, you know, Jim's son, I don't think Jim wanted Brandlin to go either. Okay. And, you know, we had a very real show, meaning like we did our very, very best not to contrive too much. Okay. There's obviously things like you and I sit in here. I get here. You're like, hey, I don't want to talk about that till we're on the show. Right. Those type of things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're going to wait till we're filming. Right.
Right.
To talk about this. So anyway, it was a hard decision because I love Jim and I personally didn't have an aversion to going there. Okay. But at this point I put my family through hell so much. I couldn't even tell you. I mean, I've been everywhere on this planet Earth, a lot of the deepest, darkest, horrible hell holes you can ever imagine. And I just felt like, you know, It's enough. Not. Yeah, I personally thought I put him through enough. Okay, and Brandlin, talking to him, somebody I love, is probably my closest friend in a lot of ways, and I love that guy to death. He, you know, him and I had talks about it too. Okay, and he, it was really, you know, we did all these shows together. And it was a really big difference because Brandlin didn't have a girlfriend or anything most of the show. And then he gets a girlfriend he's getting married to. Now, dude, his attitude changed.
Sure.
Okay. Like, he couldn't get a lot of ways until you have somebody you're in love with, truly in love with, or, you know, like, have kids. Like, I don't need, it's like, a human being you are before you have kids and after you have kids is a two different thing. If you're a true father or a true parent, you know, it fundamentally changes you. Okay. So my decisions were getting changed by this, and that's why a big reason why I didn't continue to do the show. You know, it's like I'd done everything I wanted to do with it. I felt like I ran through the finish line, you know. And am I gonna, you run the marathon, you finish, you're just gonna keep running?
When you guys were up in way up north, when you were on that polar bear hunt with the Inuits, the local people, you were that was a really crazy scenario. I mean, you guys were essentially watching them hunt, right? You were with them.
We hunted too.
You hunted too.
Yes, we were hunting.
They kind of didn't show that much on the show.
Because a couple, the real reason of that was the idea of Uncharted wasn't to do a hunting show in traditional methods that we just went out and hunted stuff. The idea of Uncharted was to show the way these wild places work and the people who live in them and live off these animals and their value they put on the animal, okay, and our value for the whole situation. And so at that point, you know, that show was more about a culture in a lot of ways that is going away, and hopefully it stays.
So what was the choice, what was behind the choice to not show you guys hunting for the polar bear? Because that was a big question that I'd had. You didn't show any.
Jim explained it really good in a Facebook post about it. Yeah. And, you know, I think it was more about that than anything.
We had
old ladies. Yes. Extremely intense. They're amazing people. And that's where Jim's hunted there a lot. And those people, he's like the Michael Jordan to a lot of those people. Hunting is a part of their culture. Like, we would be in the airports up there, and those people love Jim. Okay, they love Jim.
They know who he is.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So in these hunting rich areas, he becomes a huge famous star.
Yeah, absolutely. It's up there, it's the most intense. Okay, they love him.
Well,
okay?
It's such a primitive, I don't want to say a primitive culture. I mean, it's obviously primitive, but it's long.
It's to the bone.
Yeah, it's been around a long time, and they've been doing it this way for a long, long, long time. And there's not much room. There's not much wiggle room up there. You're not growing any crops. You know, you're living in intensely cold environments, and there's not a lot of things to hunt. And that polar bear hunt is very important to them.
Extremely. And whaling.
Whaling.
More, most important. Narwhal, bowhead, yeah. Seals, all yeah. that. Everybody wore seals.
They wore seal clothes? Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, look, these things need to be protected. Those people really get it up there, okay? They really get it.
For their life, if they want to continue
they
to live there.
Got it.
That's it, unless they're going to ship in canned goods.
They do all that, but, dude, it's a value to them, okay? It's a value, just like when we brought that rhino meat to that village. You don't think they valued that?
What does polar bear taste like?
I haven't eaten polar bear.
You didn't eat any of it?
I didn't. Dude, it was immediately frozen into a complete rock right then.
Like,
it was
so cold.
It was so cold. And Jim's eating polar bear, I think. You know, you could ask him. I didn't get to eat polar bear because we weren't. Those guys literally, the second I shot the polar bear, the guy who was running the hunt was like, this hunt's over. We're going home. Okay. And we let the polar bear sit there while we were doing the things we were doing for the show, and dude, it froze into a complete rock over less than an hour. It's like brutal, and we all know it was brutal to skin it, the whole situation.
How'd they cut it up? Like a chainsaw or something?
No, I mean, yeah, but you could still get in there and hack and get. It just wasn't like when you've dealt with a bear.
Wow.
you know, and I've hunted bears. Bears are, you know how bears are. Okay. It's just a different situation. Another emotional aspect that people have with it. They don't get.
It's the Klondike bar bear.
Yeah.
It's the Coca-Cola bear.
Like I killed this gigantic brown bear, and you know, people in Alaska get it by and large.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They live with them. They understand those bears kill all the other bears. Right. It's just, but some people just don't get it.
Did you see that television show, The Hunt?
No, man, I don't watch much TV anymore.
That was the television show that was it was hosted by the guy from the Metallica.
James Hetfield. He killed a big bear.
Well, he didn't even kill the bear. That's what's really crazy. They had a photo of him, and they used this photo of him standing behind.
So he didn't shoot that bear.
It wasn't him. It was a giant bear. Like, pull it up, Jamie. They thought that it was James Hetfield. It's not. It's another hunter.
That looks like him.
And that hunter said, like, hey, that's my fucking bear. Like, I shot that bear. Like, Hetfield is a hunter. He does hunt.
And I think he's hunted bear before.
He probably has. But the photo that they used to try to keep them out of the Glastonbury, was that what it was? Glastonbury Music Festival? Glastonbury Music Festival. See, there's the photo.
Yeah.
It's not him?
Well, it doesn't look like him there.
No.
You know, now that you look at it that big.
No, I mean, there's a guy who said that it, you know, he's like, look, that's me. That's my fucking bear. I'll tell you when I hunted it. God damn, that's a big bear.
Yeah. Do you enjoy hunting bear?
I enjoy it. I like to eat them. They taste good.
But the bear hunt itself, what do you think?
It's interesting. But being in the woods with them is amazing.
Have you hunted brown bear?
No.
Would you hunt brown bear?
I don't think so, because I'm not going to eat them.
Yeah.
That so far, I mean, that's where my head is. I understand the conservation aspect of it. 100%. Yeah. I mean, if I lived on Kodiak Island and I ran cattle or something like that,
mm-hmm.
I would absolutely hunt them. If I, for whatever reason, you know, needed to be a part of it, I would absolutely hunt them. And they absolutely should be
hunted. Would you hunt them to raise awareness about bears?
No. Okay. No, I would talk about it. It's not my job. If I was a professional hunter, maybe if I was on television.
Well, see, that's
debating it.
The interesting thing about it is the reasons we hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Can be a lot of different things.
No, I get that. I get that. I mean, the reason why I'm asking a lot of these questions, a lot of it is just because I want to cover all the bases and take it from a bunch of different angles, play devil's advocate as much as possible. But hunting bears is a very different thing than hunting white-tailed deer. When you're hunting white-tailed deer, you're hunting essentially nature's victim. I mean, these poor bastards, they run around eating berries and looking left and right and jumping away and trying to... They're at the bottom.
It's become a science in a way, hunting them.
Yeah.
To a lot of people. Yeah.
Well, I mean, hunting deer is that you're hunting prey. There's a prey. When you're hunting a bear... You're hunting a predator.
Different situation.
It's totally different. First of all, what's creepy about the bears is they don't make any noise. This is a big fucking animal.
That was the thing about the rhino. It was like a cotton ball. Made no noise. Whoa. Freaky.
3,000-pound cotton ball.
Dude, I'm telling you, bro. It was just like a bear. It reminded me of a black bear.
They just know how to sneak around.
Dude, it was in sandy soil. It made no noise.
Wow.
One time we sat down. We'd walked like, I don't know. I mean, we walked over 20 miles after the rhino. And this day, we had walked about 10 at this point. And, like, the CNN guy was a big dude, bro. Okay, he was a 280, 300-pound man, you know. And he hung in there the first day, he threw up. And after 7 miles, he started barfing everywhere. But he really wanted to be involved with it, and he got it. And we sat down. We were sitting down next to that rhino 40 yards away. That rhino got up, ran off, and we never heard it.
Wow.
Ran off. You could see where it just poof, ran.
Are they just really good at like distributing
their
weight?
It's their place, man. I don't know how they do it. Like I've hunted elephants, you would have heard that thing. Like you would have seen it for one, but you would have heard it. You hear them. Rhino, you didn't hear anything.
You never hear bear unless they want you to hear them. It's the weirdest thing.
But the reason I asked you about the brown bear was because I believe in the United States, a brown bear is like similar to the situation with the lion or some of these different animals that you know whatever you're talking about, you know, certain animals that you know strike things in North America is probably the closest thing we got, you know, to that would be
sure.
The brown bear.
Yeah,
you know, and they're hunted a lot. People get it. by and large, and to a lesser extent, by and large, people don't have as big a problem with it, I think, as they would African animals. I don't know why.
I mean, there's a lot of people that have a really hard time with brown bear, of course,
but there's a lot of people that don't. I mean, you look at, you know, even people who hunt. Oh, there's a lot of people in North America that hunt North America. So I never go to Africa.
Right.
I never. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So even amongst hunters, it's, you know.
Yeah, I think it changes the distinction whether or not you're hunting something you're going to eat or not. And you can eat brown bear, but not that many people do.
No, it's a management choice.
What does it taste like? Have you ever eaten it?
Oh, dude. I've only shot one. And I hadn't eaten it. It was eating a rotten sea lion. It's eating stuff that's going to make it pretty rough. It had ate the head off of a giant rotting sea lion. You want to see the picture?
Sure. So that it would smell and taste probably a lot like it.
It was an extremely, extremely smelly odor, like. Rough, nasty situation. It was really gross smelling, yeah.
For many people who don't know, one of the most delicious meats apparently is black bear that's been eating blueberries. Whoa. Black bear. Oh, God. Just ate the whole head off that thing, huh?
Yeah, and that bear had claimed that thing.
That's an enormous bear.
It was laying right on top of it.
Where was this?
That was on Unimak Island in Alaska, way out in the Alaskan Peninsula. And that bear had was just laying on it. And I flew in out there, and there's a guide who set up the camp, you know, and we flew in, and he hadn't been there that long, and I was just like, well, what do you think about that bear? Have you seen it? He's like, no. He said, I think it's big. I was like, well, why do you think it's big? He said, because I've seen six other bears come up to that cliff and look down and turn around and leave. He's like, it was his.
Wow. This show was interesting, that show The Hunt, because it was one of the few shows that I've ever seen on television that – you know, you have a lot of these subsistence living shows, you know, like Alaska, The Last Frontier, or Life Below Zero, but this wasn't about subsistence at all. It was about hunting to control the populations and trophy hunting. I mean, that's what these people were doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, they did cook up some backstraps on one episode. Some people sliced up some.
I don't get, like, the whole thing about, like you said, they go over there. Dude, in these camps, just trophy hunting, the animals aren't getting wasted.
Right.
Okay, you're getting into what's drawing a person out there to benefit it, regardless of why he's there in his mind, whatever it is, okay? If the result is good and the result is benefiting it, you're judging his desires to do something on what's going on in your head. You're not looking at the result.
Well, you say that the meat doesn't get wasted. If you leave it around, okay, it gets eaten by other animals.
On a brown bear, that's right. On a brown bear, okay, the other animals eat it. Whatever bear is the biggest predator of other bears, the bears, they eat them.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're all cannibals.
Okay, so but I'm saying, like, by and large, throughout hunting, there's only a few animals that don't get eaten. Okay? You know, like I said, lion.
Hyena.
I've shot some hyena. I wouldn't eat hyena.
Baboon.
My brother ate the lungs of a baboon.
Whoa. On a bet?
No, because he was hungry.
Really?
Well, and that's what the locals were eating. And he thought, well, if I'm going to eat a part of it, I'm going to eat their favorite part. And it was the lungs.
The locals like the lungs, huh?
Mm-hmm. They boiled them up.
What did he say it tastes like?
He didn't act like it was too good. I mean, I didn't get into it. We were in Central African Republic in the middle of, you know, the people before us. They just got the camp back from the Chadian rebels and shot it up. You know, we weren't really talking about stuff like that.
God, baboon lung. What is the nastiest thing you have eaten when you've been hungry on these camps?
Oh, man.
Have you ever eaten an animal that you regretted?
No, but, I mean, I've eaten things that weren't, like you said about the elephant, dude. Well, by the time we shot the elephant, we were hungry. I mean, we just threw it on coals, and we're just eating it right there. And it wasn't nasty or anything. It was food. But, you know, I haven't really gotten into something like, you know, Jim eats that igunuk, okay, which is
What's
like...
What's an igunuk?
It's like fermented walrus meat.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's like the Icelandic people do with sharks. They have that fermented shark.
Yeah, they just leave it out there in the vault. Yeah. I haven't tried that. You know, but I would try it. I mean, I've watched Jim eat a lot of crazy crap.
He's living a very odd life, Jim Shockey.
No doubt.
I mean, and I say that with all due respect. I'm not saying it in a negative way. If you don't know his show, just, I mean, even if you're not into hunting at all, like you said, that show's not really necessarily about hunting that much. I mean,
no.
It is, but it isn't. It's a lot of it is a, it's an in-depth discovery of the cultures that he's visiting.
And the emotions that we would go through on the hunt. I mean, I've cried on the show twice, man. I cried when I shot previously on the Professionals, when I shot a blue sheep, and just because it was just, you know, we had a real ordeal, and it was just like a relief and an emotional thing. And then I cried talking about my granddad one time. And
that was the Pakistan episode.
Yeah. And so it's just like, we were very real about it. We wore everything on our sleeve.
And what is he trying to do? Going to all these different... He's just soaking up a lot of different experiences? Is that his perspective on this?
I mean, you'd have to talk to him about it, and I don't even know if he would... You know, I love the guy. I've been with him a lot. And, you know, a lot of our life was connected for over a decade, and still is in a way. And he's just... He has a different attitude about it, almost like I would say some of the explorers might have had in his mind. I'm not saying that he has any delusions of grandeur that that's what he's doing, but he has a different attitude about it. And I think, you know, we both wanted to see what's left. Like, I mean, when you're going to Papua New Guinea, you're going to the edge. When you're going to the rural, I mean, we're dealing with people who are, you know, cannibals and believed in witchcraft and all sorts of stuff, you know. And
what's it like hanging out with cannibals? I
didn't deal with a cannibal, but I deal with people who knew cannibals and understood cannibalism.
Right. Right.
And we're afraid of it.
So they knew people like
they knew it to be a real thing. Okay. And like, for instance, one time I was hunting in Uganda, and, we talk about people's different attitudes and stuff. Jim and I went to Uganda on one of the first hunts when it reopened. We were hunting an animal called Sesi Island Sitatunga.
What's it called?
Sesi Island Sitatunga.
What is that?
It's an antelope that lives in a swamp on an island. Okay. And, like, I mean, we value it. You know, we love it. But anyway, so we're over there, and they were talking about this big problem they had with over in a certain area of Uganda on Lake Albert where they were buying bushmeat from the Congolese, just basically almost like from a grocery store. It would come across on a boat. It would all be cut up and everything. And the way they got the people to quit it was they said the Congolese are selling you human meat too. And they believed it.
Well, Vice did this piece on Liberia, and that was a real issue. In Liberia, they were selling human meat in these food carts on the corner. And this guy recognized it as human meat because he'd eaten human meat.
Yeah. There you go.
What the fuck? That's the difference between, you know,
it's a disconnect.
Sherman Oaks.
It's the disconnect of what is really happening. When you think about like this war we have, or, you know, going on versus ISIS, all right? And we're sitting over here, and, you know, I've been close back, you know, to Al-Qaeda and stuff like that when I would go to that part of the world, okay? I've been, you know, on the border of Afghanistan and probably in it and didn't know it, okay, for sure. And it's just, it's a huge disconnect. If you were over there and you see them selling 12-year-old girls naked in a bazaar and have an auction in Syria where they're just selling them as property for sexual abuse, whatever, sex slave, and it's just they've kidnapped them, that's what they're doing. You're going to have, if you saw that going down, who isn't going to be like immediately want this stopped? Okay. It's gone. You're going to do it. I mean, it's just the different mindset. I mean, that we have, I'm not saying that people want that to continue in any way, shape or form, but if you saw it, you'd feel differently about it. No doubt.
Well, there's definitely different ways of living in this age in 2015. And there's some ways that people are living every day just to get by that would horrify most people. And
what they consider normal.
What they consider normal. Yeah. What is normal? Our normal versus their normal.
Yeah. Normal up the Fly River in Papua New Guinea is far different than here. Normal in a pygmy village in Cameroon is far different. You're talking about, you know, like you talk about recreational drug use, okay? In Papua New Guinea, they do this thing called boo or buwe. And it's like, I don't know exactly what it is, but they take lime and they take something else, and they put it in their mouth and it has a reaction. It's like a low grade meth. People from this big all the way up to grown people on it their entire life, they're living in an altered state forever. and their mouths are red. Okay, with this stuff, it makes this nasty red blood. So you're out there with a high person that looks like a zombie. Okay, all right,
and this they is, eat people sometimes.
They're high person that looks like a zombie.
Oh god!
See if you can pull up Buway. Okay, just B U W A Y whatever. Pull it up and see if you find it. Papua New Guinea. Okay, all right, in Cameroon. In a village one time, I would say every single person that I met that was like, you know, local people on the hunt, I think they were high on weed from the morning that they waked up to from when they woke up to when they went to sleep. It's just part of their existence.
In Cameroon.
Yeah. It's just part of their existence was their daily life was so hard. They're looking for any kind of escape out of it. Okay. It's just brutal. I mean, and if you and I had to live in it, if you had, you'd understand, look, I don't judge them. I don't have to live there, right? And, you know, you and I get to go home and sleep in comfortable beds. We get to take a shower every night. I mean, just go. I challenge the average person to go 2 weeks without a shower. Just go 2 weeks without a shower. Have one pair of underwear. See what your existence is like.
And then do it in the jungle.
Then do it in the jungle, man.
Of Cameroon.
Do it or wherever. Or on the mountains
New Guinea.
In Afghanistan. Our mountains of Pakistan, mountains of Mongolia.
What is the scariest place that you ever went to when you were doing all these nutty adventures?
Man, I've had some scary, scary ass incidences of falling. You know, I thought I was going to die from falling twice. And I had a guy save my life in Armenia. Went on two unsuccessful sheep hunts there. And I fell. It was horrible. I thought I was done.
How far did you fall?
Well, I was sliding on a sheet of ice, and I had my stick, and I've kept my stick buried in, and it saved me, and this dude risked his life and came and saved my life.
Wow.
And so I was looking down at 2,000 feet and then going off, sliding straight down 2,000 feet, then going off a cliff of a few hundred feet, and then going down the bottom.
Whoa.
And then, you know, I've had animals, you know, the closest animal that ever nearly got me was a black bear.
Where was this?
That was in Alaska.
What happened?
Silly stuff, you know, just real thick. And I was hunting with a Athabascan person, you know, half and half, or person that was half Indian, half white person, and awesome guy. And we were walking, we were actually moose hunting, and I had a bear tag. And I looked straight down, and I saw this bear print on the ground. And I looked at it, and I said, man, that's like the freshest track I've ever seen in my life. I was like, it must have, like, just been here. I'm talking to this dude just, like, closer. You know how you walk when you're hunting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I hear, and I look up, and it's climbing the tree right here. Okay, we had jumped it. So I threw up, and I shot it. Anyway, we tracked it, and it was really, really thick like those. Have you hunted in Alaska or even, like, or south, or British Columbia or anywhere on the coast?
British Columbia, I have.
Yeah, like those alders, you know, it's just nasty, thick brush, right? And anyway, I couldn't see anything. You know how quiet a black bear is, right? So the guide sees it, and he sees it, and I can't see it. He's like right in front of me. I'm like, well, shoot it. You know, if you can see it, I can't see it. Boom. Dude, it flipped out. It just destroying everything around. Big 7-foot black bear, you know, just destroying everything around it. And it rolled to where, and I shot in there. Boom, boom, boom. And I shot in there, and, you know, I thought I'd got it. You know, I felt pretty good about that. And this whole thing happened just like in a few minutes. Okay. It just wasn't very long. Right. And then I walk over there to see where the bear's at. I'm walking around like, you know, walking, and I'm looking. And then I look, and the bear is just like right here looking the opposite direction. Okay.
So alive.
Very. And just turned and just went as I fell down. Poof.
So you fell back and shot it.
Yeah, I fell back and shot it.
Ooh.
Yeah. And that was just... But, you know, different situations. Like, as far as the country goes, you know, I had been in a lot of different scary places with regards to, you know, people more than anything. You know, I've hunted Ethiopia a couple of times. Some of the people were real weird.
Oh, my God. That's that guy's got that stuff in his mouth.
There you go.
That's what they looked like over there. What's that stuff called again?
It's boo is what they called it. Boo way or something.
I Googled it's called... Batel nut,
yeah, or something it's like some that. Kind of nut, B-E-T-E-L. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
and it's got some sort of what's the effect of it? But tell me.
Well, it's obviously a bad teeth on effect on your teeth.
Yeah, it seems like it. Jesus Christ. Huh.
Betel nut. Yeah.
And it has some sort of a narcotic effect or a
stimulant effect.
Is it like that cat stuff that they chew?
Yeah, that's a different Somalia? Deal. I mean, dude, I'm not, you know.
Just
I'm
a
not,
bunch of different
I don't know
stimulants.
A lot about drugs, so.
But Jesus Christ. It's a hard life. It's a very hard life. And you think that all these experiences going to all these different places have made you appreciate your own existence here in civilization more?
100%. It makes you really, like, just like the way people are abused in other places and the way they don't have rights.
The value of life.
The value of life. They're, if you're abused, you know, and you're just taken advantage of by whatever, the government, the local, every, you're just the situation, your plight in the world. I don't think that, you know, people say, well, there's no value of life in Africa. I understand, you know, I watched one time a guy didn't want to spend $40 to keep his kid alive and let him die. He said he already spent $100 and that was enough.
Oh.
Okay, you're getting into real situations, Joe, like that you see different ways people look at it. And
Jesus Christ.
And so, now look, is this every person there? No, but that's situations that happen. Those are choices they had to make.
Wow.
And so, yeah, like, absolutely. It makes me appreciate America. It makes me appreciate our Bill of Rights. It makes me appreciate our political system. It makes me appreciate, you know, we bitch about things here that the other world would die to have as a complaint. You know, we're upset that traffic's bad. We're upset that, you know, my wife is mad at me that I come home at 5:30 and I said I'll be on five.
Right. Okay. No cannibals eating beetle nuts.
Yeah, I mean, we're, you know, people are upset about, you know, this transgender situation. I mean, dude, mm-hmm. Who cares? You get to go home and hug your kid, and you got the world's biggest army dying for your rights, dying for you. You have a giant system that's protecting your life. You have people dying for you every day.
That's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it, people would say, is that giant system is set up by the military-industrial complex to steal resources
Whatever.
In other
okay.
countries.
Okay, that's why everybody's coming over here, right? That's
well,
why they're
this
all fine.
It's the yeah. best, yeah. for sure.
Okay,
this is the
why,
best possible situation.
That's why we're not flooding into Cameroon
But it
today.
Doesn't mean
You
that
and I are on a boat to get
ideal.
To that better life.
Well, we know that it can be better. I mean, that's, I think, what the argument is. The argument isn't we should stop complaining.
No. I'm not saying
so
that
we know,
should.
We
I'm
know
not saying
it can
they can't
be better,
but I'm just saying when you see it.
Right. It's far better than New Guinea. It's far better than Somalia. It's far better than a lot of the places you've traveled
yeah,
to.
Yes, absolutely.
When you do travel to these places and you do go over there and you experience their life, does it give you a feeling of like almost like helplessness? Like you can't do enough to help these people. The system that they're involved in, the life that they live, the community and that they're sort of entangled in.
I can tell you, Hunts, I've gone on with my dad, and he brought 20 full giant Cabela's bags just worth of gifts for him. You know, just giving stuff at the very end. My dad's named Larry. We called it Larry Mart. We just let them all come in and just pick everything they wanted, you know. And
mostly giving thing. Them things to hunt with?
No, so just soccer balls, frisbees, clothes, toothbrushes, anything, you know. And these are people that, like, need it.
And this is not something that anybody would expect from you. They see this thing about you killing the rhino.
Dude, I'm like so judged. I don't, whatever. I don't care what people expect. I know what my life's like and I know what I do.
But you certainly must have some feeling about it. Otherwise, you wouldn't respond to them, right?
I mean, like the ones that, look, I mean, I have a feeling about it. I'm just trying to like bring some awareness that, hey, maybe there's more to this than what you see. Mm-hmm. You can hate me. That's fine. Whatever.
Well, CNN, you know, like you said, they came under fire because that's kind of exactly what they said. They when they followed
you. Mean they
you
went over there and reported?
They did.
They went over there and reported?
They did actual real journalism, which is getting rarer and rarer.
We talked about that. You know, the reason I felt comfortable with those guys, everybody in the world wanted to come. Okay. Mm-hmm. Look, it's their, you know, they all wanted to come. The reason I felt comfortable with Jason Morris and Ed Lavandera, is I sat down with them and I said, you're going to have to come to this with an open mind. You're just going to have to come and throw away whatever you got. And when you come on a hunting trip, you're complicit in it. I told them, I said, you're going to be there. You're look, Ed, if the rhino gets somebody, it knocks both the dudes down with guns. You may have to grab it to save somebody's life and kill the thing. You got to understand that. This isn't like...
Did you show him how to use a gun?
Absolutely. I took him on a hunt beforehand. I did all this stuff. He understood.
You went on a different hunt beforehand?
Yeah, we went on... Look, I was taking people who had never been hunting before. I'm not going to put them in there. Dude, it'd be freaking a joke for me to take them out on their first real hunting experience.
For
it's an animal
rhino.
That's going to kill them.
What I mean, did you like, take them hunting for before
just,
that?
Just plains game animals, just for a day, you know. And, they, you know, I was trying to figure out who could actually, like, make it and not get killed. You know, make it not cause somebody's death. Because, you know, when you're looking around,
you get goofy. Yeah.
Yeah. A couple of them got goofy. You know, Ed ended up being the only person there. And then the rhino charged him. And I like all like the wildest crap turn of events. Here's the CNN guy running at me and coming underneath the gun.
What did he describe the experience like personally? What did he take away from it?
Boy, it was a eye-opening experience to all those guys. Like, I honestly felt like one of them really was, he wasn't on, I mean, he was kind of real ambivalent, but he wasn't like some guy who thought it was the best thing in the world, for sure. Ed was really pretty open-minded about it. He just wanted to go over there and report what was going down, true journalist stuff, okay? They were really pretty hardcore journalistic about it. But I think there, when we delivered the meat, I think he kind of got teary-eyed. I mean, he kind of got, at that point, he kind of got it. And the fact that, man, this is real. You know, he got a big experience out of it because the rhino went for him. You know, he was like, he got the fear of an animal trying to kill him. You know, so he had a pretty unique experience about it. I think he talked about it on there. I can't remember, but he didn't talk about the rhino charging him, but he, for somebody who wasn't involved in hunting, he made one of the smartest moves I've ever seen anybody do, where he ran. If he ran a different way, he probably would be dead right now.
What did he do?
Well, the rhino, remember I told you that we jumped it, right? And we sat down, right? And it left. Well, then we kept following it. And this is like at the 10-mile point. We followed it. We jumped it. We didn't know we jumped it. We went over there. We saw that we did. And we had so many people there, we had to keep splitting the group up, and then they would come back up and like, right. And so I told Ed, I said, look, man, if this thing goes wrong, it's going to be when we lose the track. Okay. And so when we're walking along, we lose the track. And Henty, PH, goes with a couple of the trackers one way. I go with a couple of the trackers the other way. And then I hear, woof, and it's behind me. And the two guys in front of me just immediately move from about here to there. So I see them moving and I heard it behind me. So to make distance, I just took these steps to get to right there and then turn. Cause I thought, well, if I just turn around right here, it's going to hit me. Right. Mm-hmm. Cause it was so close. And
how close,
man, like 30, 40 feet.
Oh,
okay. It bedded down. We jumped it again. Okay. And so, and it ran, I turned around. I just saw it for that. Dude, that thing moved like lightning, dude. It was like, I don't know if you ever watched any bull riding, dude. It's like a real athletic bull with a saber on it, you know? Okay. And so anyway, it goes, and we were really lucky. And Henty came back and looked at Ed and said, look, and he said, if this thing, this next time it's coming, okay, we pushed it twice, it's hot, it's going to come. And so anyway, we kept going. And I said, hey, Henty, I think you should go back there and let's just split it up again. You know, put them 100 yards behind us. Okay. And we'll keep one cameraman with me and you and the trackers. And then Ed can stay a little bit further behind and another guy who was there with us. He goes back there, talks to him, comes back up to me. And this is after we walked another 20 minutes or so. And I said, what's up? He said, yeah, we're good. We start walking. And then I hear just like some noise, you know, and it was the other dude trying to get my attention from like 30 yards back. Okay. And his voice was dry because we hadn't drunk water in a couple hours. Okay. We're out. And then I hear Henty say, Ed, get down, Ed, get down. You know, just like run, get down, run, run, run. And I'm like, you know, I just plant my right foot as hard as I could. I was like, I'm not moving. You know, I had time to think about that. And like in this whole thing lasted like 3 seconds. So I had time to think about it. And then I look and I see Ed just flying at me, like running. Like, dude, the Cowboys would have picked him up that day. That dude, that big dude, he was flying, bro. Like, fear is a huge motivator. And he's flying at me. He comes like coming from an angle like right here where this moose skull is and just ducks and just flies underneath the rifle. I know it's coming, right? I know, right. You know.
So he knew that you were going to pull your rifle up, so he went under the rifle.
He went, yeah, he was, Henty was yelling at him, get down, get down, get down, you know, because we're really worried about shooting each other.
Right.
We're all stringed out. Really what happened was I think Ed missed the memo to set back. Okay. And he started walking forward. So when he started walking forward, the rhino had actually circled around on its own track. And in a way was sitting there waiting for us. Okay. So Henty and I walk past it. Well, Ed starts walking out. Well, the rhino gets up, walks around this tree and starts taking steps for him. Okay. Like looking like this, kind of inquisitive. And then just came, dude. Like just was like a bat out of hell.
So you shot that thing when it was on a charge.
It was charging Ed. He runs under. He like moves so quick. And I like, we talked about it. Because I was like, talk to the producer. I was like, dude, Ed's really big, bro. You know, I was like, he's like, don't worry. He's light on his feet. You should have seen him in Ferguson.
It's like, okay. Ferguson, yeah, Jesus Christ. Okay. This guy's going to the craziest fucking spots on earth.
Yeah. So anyway.
Somebody at CNN's mad at Ed.
Yeah. So anyway, he's like, he comes flying underneath me. The animal's charging him. And when it, you know, they don't have good eyesight. Okay. So when he came low, I think that it was so thick that the rhino lost him. Like, or, you know, lost where he went. And it kind of just veered a little bit to the left. And when he comes underneath me, I just see it coming and turning, like, just turning, veering. And it's, like, less than 18 yards. You know, it's right there. 45 feet. And I boom, boom.
Whoa.
Yeah.
When you got up to the rhino's body, what is that feeling like?
It was like, in this case, it was different than any hunt I'd ever been on. You know, because so much went into
the magnitude of the experience.
Yeah, like the magnitude of the experience, the magnitude of the whole situation, magnitude being that, like, this is, like, the most, you know, hunt under a microscope that maybe ever existed.
Without a doubt.
Okay, and so I was just like, this stress that was going into it, because we could have shot the wrong one, right?
Right.
Okay, what happens if the wrong one charges?
Right.
You got to kill it. And then we kill the wrong one. That's the worst thing that could happen. Right. Outside of somebody dying.
What does happen when that happens? If you killed one of the younger males.
Yeah, you don't bring it home. You leave it. It's just
the hunt end there?
Yeah, that you're done.
So the $350,000 is gone, and this problem male is still out there killing
the
bulls.
It's the absolute worst situation.
Wow.
And so anyway, so to walk up at it, have the guy, you know, look at it. We saw it from a game camera that was on a water hole. We saw a picture of it, and the guy said, that's it. This is the one that killed the one last year. This is it. Okay. And so he knew it by, there was ear notch from where it had, you know, when they originally dropped that animal off there, so they could recognize it. And so, and there's other animals, you know, the rhinos there, there's just rhinos there. I mean, it's a wild area, you know? And so the reason they're there is that water is there. Okay. So anyway, just walking up to it, it's just like, it wasn't like it's over, because it really kind of wasn't. I knew that all this storm was going to happen.
You just didn't know to the extent?
Well, this time I knew. You know, this time I knew it was coming.
I mean, it really was the most scrutinized hunt the human race has ever known.
Absolutely.
I can't think of a close second. What's a close second? I really don't have one in mind. I've never seen anything that got this kind of scrutiny.
I did. Look, I've been involved in hunting my whole life, and I never seen anything like it. And so, like, it was just like, I felt an extreme amount of pressure on me to make sure everything was done correctly. And that's why I felt comfortable bringing them. I felt like they were just going to do an honest portrayal of what was up.
Have you stayed in contact with Ed since that?
Yeah, I've talked to him. You know, he was down at the floods in Houston the other day. I just said, hey, you know, what's up? And, you know, letting him know kind of what else had happened, you know, since then, with where the rhino was at and stuff like that. Because he generally had an interest in it. Mm-hmm. Like, he gave a damn, you know.
What is his take on the backlash?
He got to experience some backlash himself during a deal in Ferguson, where the Drudge Report reported that he showed where this guy's place was at. So he dealt with a bunch, which I don't know if that was true or not. I really didn't get into it. I don't think it was. But I don't know. And anyway, he had dealt with a lot of scrutiny before, so he kind of understood it. But he kind of felt a lot like you did, like anybody would. They're threatening your kids. Come on. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? This is bull crap, you know? And I think almost every person you would, even Piers Morgan, you know, who Piers, when did you see my interview with him?
No.
Okay. The first time I did an interview with Piers was when we caught this big shark over here in Huntington Beach.
Right.
Okay. He was all over that. That dude loved that. He thought that was awesome. Long live your fish. And this is the coolest thing ever. Okay. Like, we were kind of surprised, right, when we did that. So then the rhino thing comes up. And one of the producers for that show, you know, calls me, and I said, sure, I'll talk to him. And so we, or no. Ed called me, and he said, do you want to talk about it? You know, you're welcome to talk. I said, sure, I'll talk to Piers, is how that happened. Now I remember. Mm-hmm. And so they got me on there, dude, and he came like guns a-blazing. And at the end of it, he's like, you may have a point with the conservation aspects of this, but what I don't get is your hunting photos. Okay, so the rage about me standing there next to an animal bothered him like it bothers thousands of people. Okay, and so, yeah, but he said it in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
He said,
you're right, but don't take pictures?
Yeah, you may have a point, but this is what pisses me off.
Well, that's stupid. That's just a photograph. Why should you not capture that moment? If you're going to do it, if there's no problem with doing it, the actual act isn't a problem, but the photograph of the act is a problem?
Yeah, it enraged
so many
people.
That's insane.
Well, he's no longer on their network.
Well, he's a douchebag.
Well,
I don't say that about a lot of people, but that guy was involved in some really shady shit in England with the tabloids, where the tabloids had hacked into victims' cell phones. Do you know that whole story behind it?
Mm-mm.
A family of a woman who turned up missing, they got hope because they found that she had checked her voicemail on her cell phone. Well, it turns out she didn't. The company that he worked for had hacked into her phone, and they were checking her voicemail.
Oh, nice.
It's tabloid shit, man. You know, and that's a lot of what he did was tabloid sensationalism shit, where even if he had an opinion on something, you know, there's a lot of what they do that, like we were talking about before, they're trying to get social brownie points. They're trying to...
We're going to attack guns. Look, dude, okay, if somebody comes in here and you don't have a gun and I do, you want me to just let them kill you?
Well, not only that, the way...
It's hypocritical.
I mean, look, Ted Nugent is a funny character to have on when you're discussing that, but at the end of the day, he's very fucking informed when it comes to that stuff. Very informed. And Pierce wasn't prepared for that, and he looked stupid. He really did. He didn't understand, like, a lot of those shooting deaths are cops shooting people in the act of crimes like murder and domestic violence and robbery.
Every time I talk to, like, a big... I talk to him, talk to Aaron Burnett on there, talk to... They may have come at me a little bit. They didn't have the facts, right? And mm-hmm. the problem is, if you don't have the facts on your side, and especially in this situation, if you don't have the facts on your side and you're left with, I'm going to cuss this guy out and threaten his kids, you've already lost, bro.
Right.
You've lost. And so they're just left without rage, and okay, but that ain't helping anything.
I hope, agree with you or disagree with you, if people are listening to this, that they get at the end of the day that this is a very complex situation that is not... It's not black and white. There's no good guys and bad guys. And when you're looking at something like hunting, you're looking at something that has existed literally since the beginning of human beings. It's been a part of what created civilization in the first place. What led to us surviving. And that's been somehow or another co-opted by factory farming and fast food and restaurant chains, and that has become our reality. And our existence is entirely unnatural and disconnected because of it. Our relationship with the very food we eat is delusional. And what you're doing by being a part of conservation, whether or not, you know, it makes sense to people or whether or not they agree with it or disagree with it, once they look at the actual facts behind it, they'll see that this is not, you're not doing an evil thing. Not only are you not doing an evil thing, you're not doing a thing that even can be logically criticized from the standpoint of conservation. You might feel uncomfortable that someone's going to go over there and shoot a rhino. You might feel uncomfortable about it, but that's your right. When you start looking at the facts behind it, though, it's very difficult to argue against the idea of hunting as conservation. Whether you want to do it or not. Like I said, I don't want to do it. I don't want to hunt a rhino. I don't want to hunt a brown bear. I don't want to. But I understand it. I understand it completely and totally from the point of view of conservation.
Well, I'm glad that you do. I think it's cool that you do. And I think that it's cool that you're open-minded enough to get something that, hey, maybe you don't want to do. Because I think that's kind of the issue is like, look, I don't want to do a lot of things, but I don't judge people who do. And I definitely don't judge people who actually have a stake in the game when it comes to keeping something around or keeping something good around. You know,
the uncomfortable reality of attaching monetary value to life, whether it's the plains games animals that were on the verge of extinction just a few decades ago in Africa that are thriving now because they're valuable, or whether it's because of white-tailed deer, which there's more white-tailed deer in America now than there were when Columbus
came. Yeah, I mean, we could talk for another 3 hours about, like, conservation success stories.
How about elk?
Yeah.
More elk than have ever existed.
Like, Florida panther, mm-hmm. even there, okay, hunters brought that back. Hunters brought the wolf back. Trappers brought the wolf back to North America. Okay, and especially in like the Southwest. All right, a guy named Roy McBride. Google it. But so you can. It's the people who live it have a vested stake in keeping it around. And if you have a problem with hunters keeping these animals around, then don't go take pictures of a white rhino. Don't, because the reason that white rhino's there is because of hunters, bro. Period. The reason these white-tailed deer in big numbers, because of hunters. Okay, so if you're taking a picture of it, you may not get it, you know, and it's insulting to those who have done all the work to keep it around. So you can have a opinion about it that's justified or not, right? It's not. It's just your opinion of it, okay? And it's there for you to talk about. It's there for you to enjoy at a price you didn't have to pay.
It's a convenient opinion.
It's a very convenient opinion. And so, I mean, I honestly think that, I don't know, the average person, especially when it comes to a lot of these wild animals, really needs to look within their self and think, is their emotion going to help it? And do I hate this guy enough that he gets cancer and dies just because he does something I don't agree upon? And then go over to Namibia and go take a picture of black rhinos that this situation helped stay alive. Period. Okay. I get so sick of the people saying, well, just because you give money in Africa, it's going to corrupt. Not every situation. Give me a break. You know, my dream is for these children that live there to have a heritage that we have with deer, that we have with bear. They can go out to a wild place, lay down at night, hear a lion roar 100 years from now. I give a damn about that. Sincerely.
I believe you. Thanks for coming on, man.
No problem.
I really appreciate it. It was a nice, long conversation. I think we chewed it up. We chewed it up good.
All right. Appreciate you, bro.
All right. Thank you, brother.
All right.
Corey Knowlton, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you guys on Wednesday. Greg Fitzsimmons will be here. Until then, enjoy your life. Big kiss.